proof positive.
Saddam Hussein possesses some of the world's deadliest weapons.
Saddam Hussein has biological weapons and the capability to rapidly produce more, many more.
The world is increasingly seeing this from the United States' point of view.
Saddam Hussein is not disarming.
He's not disarming.
Saddam Hussein is not disarming.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Mark Knoller, live at the White House. It's another showdown with President Bush as the House moves toward a vote on a measure to fund the war in Iraq just 2 months at a time. President Bush says piecemeal appropriations are a bad idea, and if it were to reach his desk, he'd cast another veto.
And the American people must understand that if you fund our troops every 2 months, you're in a, put in a position where we have to delay certain procurement, or that military contracts must be delayed. There's a lot of uncertainty in funding when it comes to two-month cycles.
But after 2 hours of Pentagon briefings on the war today, Mr. Bush did say he'll negotiate setting benchmarks for progress by the Iraqi government. But that's not good enough for Democratic leaders, unless the benchmarks have consequences if they are not met. Live at the White House, I'm Mark Knoller. With more CBS News, here's Harley Carnes.
Talk to people all over the state of Florida, and they talk about the smell of smoke. Hundreds of wildfires burned there. Robin Araby's home is near the Osceola National Forest, where just one of those many fires burns.
I can see my house, so it's, you know, that's good for me, but a lot of these people can't see their homes. They don't know where the fire is and what's happening to their homes.
Drought only makes things worse. So dry the land seems to burn. They need rain. Hot but far from dry in more and more of Missouri.
With the Platte River rising, it took just over a day to build makeshift dikes.
Basically, we would build a 6-foot berm across both the railroad and also the state highway.
You can't drive over the river, but BNSF Railroad General Manager Boyd Andrew says trains will run until the river gets too high. He says it won't take long to finish the dike over the tracks.
45 minutes. We've already did a test run, so we already know how long it'll take us. We're ready to go at a moment's notice.
With the river top just inches away from the bridge bottoms, he says he hopes he won't have to see how well the dike works. Peter King, CBS News, Platte County, Missouri.
The maker of the painkiller OxyContin and top executives plead guilty to lying about the monkey on your back that drug can be.
People who are suffering from chronic pain want a drug that can relieve them of that pain and yet at the same time is safe not only for themselves and society. And Purdue promised that.
U.S. Attorney John Brownlee says the company will pay more than $700 million in civil and criminal penalties for lying about it. They've made billions with the drug. Dale Earnhardt is leaving the racing team his father started.
We both want to be and get to the same place, but we both simply have different visions on how to get there.
Earnhardt is 12th in the NASCAR points race this year, but a bidding war is expected for his services. His name is golden. It's a marketing dream, win or lose. On Wall Street, the Dow lost almost 148 points today. The NASDAQ was off almost 43. Oil prices, $61.81 a barrel, up 26 cents. This is CBS News.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. When your washing machine makes a mess, you get a plumber. When your hair is a mess, you go to a hairdresser. But where do you go when there's a mess on your floors? Visit an Orrick store. We're the only place for lightweight vacuums, expert advice for a cleaner, healthier home, and really great deals. Call 1-800-989-4200 or click Orrick.com or drive on over today. Whatever mess you're in, we'll get you out of it.
Chances are your old computer can't run all the latest software. Get into Office Depot today for a huge assortment of the newest computers and software, plus wireless printers, flat panel monitors, memory solutions, and more. Don't risk slowing down your business. Let Office Depot lend you a hand.
Whoa, Office Depot can lend you a hand.
What's inside really is what matters most.
Just because someone is thin doesn't mean they're invincible.
In fact, just because you're thin on the outside doesn't mean you're not fat inside. Researchers now think internal fat could be just as bad for you, fat that surrounds vital organs like the heart or liver. And they think people who lose weight by simply cutting back on calories but avoiding the gym may be fooling themselves. Cardiologist Louis Tischholz of Hackensack University Medical Center.
Diet and exercise are important to everybody, whether you're thin or fat.
Cammie McCormick, CBS News.
Breaking news out of Chicago now. CBS news station WBBM-TV is reporting there's been a shooting on a city bus, and the word is five people have been shot there. No word on their condition. Again, that is in Chicago, a city bus where five people have been shot, according to WBBM television there in Chicago. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
Hey, Mama, happy Mother's Day. Let's take your worries on the way. Give you a special Mother's Day. Let's go out back tonight.
Let go of where to go this Mother's Day. Go out back, where the pasta is bold, the steaks are juicy, the chicken tender. It's a nice way of saying thanks. No worries.
Let's go out back tonight.
This Mother's Day, let go.
Every day is Mother's Day.
Go out back.
Yo, so what'll it be?
A dozen pork chops, a couple of those strip steaks, there, 2 pounds of kielbasa, and a half ton of Peace of Mind.
That's it?
What if you could buy Peace of Mind? Well, you can with Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury certified pre-owned vehicles. Because we notice everything. Everyone must pass a 115-point inspection. You even get a vehicle history report, and it's all backed by our 6-year, 75,000-mile warranty coverage. Now that's Peace of Mind.
And I like some pride of ownership, too.
See your dealer for limited warranty coverage details, or visit FordCPO.com.
Today's program was pre-recorded.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not.
Really?
Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
Thanks for joining us this hour on the Peter B. Collins Show. Scott Dick, our regular contributor on military and veterans affairs, is on maneuvers in Germany. He'll return in a couple of weeks. But we maintain our theme about veterans issues this hour. We're going to focus on homelessness among U.S. veterans who've served since Korea and up to and including the veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan. Later this hour, we'll meet Michael Blecker of Swords to Plowshares and Amy Fairweather, who heads the Iraq Project for Swords to Plowshares. But to get us started, I'd like to introduce Cheryl Beversdorf. She is the president and CEO of the National Coalition of Homeless Veterans. Cheryl, thanks for joining us today on the Peter B. Collins Show.
You're quite welcome. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm sorry that your work is so massive and appears to be growing, and that it's something that we couldn't clear up and put behind us and say, well, yeah, we used to have a problem with homeless veterans in our country.
You're absolutely right. I wish that our organization didn't have to exist, but unfortunately it does, and we do still have a lot of work to do.
Give us the dimensions, if you will, starting with veterans prior to the current conflict, but including Desert Storm. What is the estimated population in the United States of service members who are homeless by some description?
Well, according to the Department of Veterans Affairs, the number that they use is 400,000 homeless veterans are homeless throughout a year. And on any given night, the number is nearly 200,000.
Wow. Now, this is such a shameful legacy in a nation that is so wealthy. And one of the issues that I've raised before, Cheryl, is that the current conflict has been based on borrowed money and blank checks. And sky's the limit. Up until the current dust-up over the supplemental for Iraq and Afghanistan, the Republican Congresses just gave the president one blank check after another. And unfortunately, all of that money has gone to defense contractors and many other sources, but precious little of it has trickled down to our veterans. And, of course, the Walter Reed scandal gives us one glimpse of the problem, but it's only a partial look.
Well, and that's true. In terms of what's been going for the war, but I do want to say that one thing that has occurred over the last 15 years is there is certainly much more awareness to the homeless veteran population, unlike after the Vietnam era. I think that, and I would certainly say that the Department of Veterans Affairs has begun to recognize this problem, and one of the areas that they have really particularly focused on is providing grants for a program that's called the Grant and Per Diem Program. And what that is, and what NCHV is mostly involved with, is the community-based organization. These are places around the country that is sort of veterans helping veterans, which provide supportive services and transitional housing to homeless veterans.
Mm-hmm.
And this program has really been a godsend in terms of addressing some of the issues of homelessness. But indeed, sort of addressing what you're saying, there's a great need for more grant and per diem beds to help not only the homeless veterans that are still from the Vietnam era, but those who are likely to emerge in connection, you know, coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Cheryl Beversdorf from the National Coalition for Homeless Veterans. Their website is nchv.org, just the letters of National Coalition Homeless Veterans, nchv.org. And there's a search engine there where somebody can go and access resources in one's own community. Is this right?
That's correct. In fact, NCHV actually gets as many as 200 calls a month from people who are at risk of homelessness or are already at homeless and are looking for a place to go, a place to get the assistance that they need. And so that website provides a lot of resources for men and women who are at risk of being homeless or are homeless. And they can use that, or, as I said, they can call our telephone number, 1-800-VET-HELP. And once we find out where they're calling from, we'll provide names and addresses and phone numbers to these individuals and try and get them the help they need.
And, Cheryl, one of the issues we confront here is that it often is a complex set of issues that produces the problem of a homeless veteran. And certainly it starts with their service and unaddressed post-traumatic stress disorder or other injuries. And there are other psychological problems that may not fit neatly into PTSD or other packages. And then there are issues related to their ability to work and function, you know, in an interpersonal way. So these are complex issues. And how do you address the individual set of issues when they are presented by one person?
Well, you're absolutely right. In fact, I wanted to sort of elaborate and then answer your question.
Please.
Not only are there the health issues that you're mentioning, PTSD, depression, perhaps substance abuse problems, as well as the issues pertaining to an inability to get employment, perhaps not having the right skills, not having the right training. A third issue really is the problem of housing. Sometimes in many communities, the housing is not affordable, and if someone is having health issues that I mentioned earlier, or not able to get the job that they need, they may obviously not be able to find the housing that they need. So one of the things that NCHV encourages, first of all, is that if someone, well, let me back up. One of the things that sometimes is the problem is when young people leave Iraq and Afghanistan, initially they may not think that there is a problem. They may say, well, everything is going to be okay when I get back home. You know, the family's going to be fine. I'm going to have that job that I, you know, left. Housing will be okay. So they don't even recognize that they may have some symptoms or some difficulties until 6 months, a year after they've returned home. But I think it's really important also to go to, first of all, like the vet center at the VA, you know, within the Department of Veterans Affairs locally at their vet center and perhaps get counseling if they need it. or if they have some kind of medical issues, they should perhaps also go to the VA medical center. And if they are at risk of homelessness, at each VA medical center, there is a homeless veterans coordinator. And then in addition, what you had mentioned earlier, and I really appreciate that, that information about the fact that there are community-based organizations around the country who are prepared to help these individuals. So there are a lot of resources out there, but people need to recognize when they have difficulties that they need to get the help. And I think most importantly, I wish there was some way that we could continue to advise these individuals that there are those resources out there, because sometimes they're not aware after they've been home a while that these resources are available for them.
We're talking with Cheryl Beversdorf, President and CEO of the National Coalition for Homeless Veterans. And right now we're joined by Carl Young, a regular listener to our program, a veteran himself and an activist on behalf of his fellow vets in the North Coast communities around Eureka and Arcata. Carl, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show today.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, it's your fault. you have raised these issues in my mind. And when I saw a newspaper article about the National Coalition for Homeless Vets and Cheryl Beversdorf, I was moved to put this program together. And I wanted to invite you to give a heads up, because in June you and others are organizing the second annual Stand Down in Humboldt County.
Yes, we are. This is going to be our second. We had an interesting turnout last time. We had 181 veterans show up. We've taken sort of a new flavor towards stand downs. As you know, there's a lot of negative attributions associated with being called homeless or being a homeless veteran. And what we chose to do is to invite all veterans that would like information concerning military benefits to Veterans Affairs benefits to, hey, do you need housing? Do you need food, shelter, things like this? And we had just had this outrageous turnout from World War II vets all the way up to present, including a number of widows of veterans that had no idea that they may be eligible for benefits, too. So it worked out real well.
Mm-hmm. And this year, the event is in early June. Give us the details.
Yeah, June 8th through the 10th. And you can contact the Redwood Vets Center here in Eureka. That's our PTSD counseling unit. They're doing all the registrations this year. Unfortunately, I do not have a number right in front of me right now, but that is available in the phone book, Redwood Vets Center.
All right.
We have got a coalition of many different veterans organizations that traditionally, in a lot of cases, don't work with one another, that have all found this to be very much a good common cause. And what was very unique last year is that we had at least one, if not three, Iraqi war veterans show up, and we immediately welcomed them home and brought them into our groups, hopefully provided them with some help and some assistance. And a lot of guilt feelings going on with some of these guys. A lot of these guys are just disoriented. Things aren't working out at home. A lot of these guys hit the road, you know, and that traditional hat of being homelessness sometimes doesn't fit everybody.
You're right.
Humboldt County especially is where a lot of folks came up during the 60s and 70s to get away from the Vietnam situation and away from, you know, what's going on down there, just to be left alone.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing those trends now, and it's interesting that a lot of these guys that came up here years ago are now coming out to help out with these veterans.
Yeah.
And they're very, very committed to it, and it's really nice having these people working with us.
Well, Carl, as we get closer to the date, we'll talk more about it. And as you know, we are working to see if I can come up and do a live broadcast there from Eureka on the Friday, June 8th. And if that happens, we'll certainly announce it. But just want people to know we're working on that. And we will support you every way we can, because I think it's a great effort, and we know that there are people out there who need our support.
Yeah, and I want to thank the chairperson there for the National Coalition for Homeless Veterans. You have an excellent website. I've used your material tons of times when we're doing press releases and whatever the case may be. And please continue the good work and continue to urge Congress to give us more funding. We need set-aside monies for stand-downs.
You bet. Carl Young, thanks for checking in today.
Thank you, Bill.
We're going to take a break and return with Cheryl Beversdorf from the National Coalition for Homeless Veterans, and we'll be joined by Michael Blecker from Swords to Plowshares. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show.
tell you why, no. They only want to tell you lies. It's time.
And the Peter B. Collins Show continues.
It's time to go home, to take our boys and win them, to take our girls and win them, to take our boys and win them, to take our girls. It's time to go home, to take our boys and win them, to take our girls and win them, to take our boys and win them.
With some possible exceptions, I believe most of the people who tune into this radio program believe it's time to bring our soldiers home from Iraq. But what do they face when they come home? That's what we're talking about this hour on the Peter B. Collins Show. We've been talking with Cheryl Beversdorf, President and CEO of the National Coalition for Homeless Veterans. And before we introduce our next guest, Cheryl, I just wanted to ask if the kind of stand-downs that Carl Jung and his friends are putting together in Eureka are common around the country. Are other veterans working to support their incoming vets?
Absolutely. In fact, I was delighted to hear Carl talk about the stand-down because, interestingly, the whole stand-down concept started in California, San Diego. And the idea actually came from the Vietnam era in that the stand-down was a military activity in which battle-weary soldiers had the opportunity to get away from the, you know, the combat that was going on and come to a secure area where they could get, you know, fresh clothing, food, rest, recuperation, letters from home, an opportunity to just, sort of recover from what they were experiencing in the battlefield. And there was a couple of individuals who were down in San Diego who felt that this concept was an excellent idea and could be used as a way of bringing homeless veterans into the same kind of experience, that in one place, all kinds of community resources, as well as, you know, getting clean clothes and getting a shave and getting the kinds of services that they needed mm-hmm. would be in one place. And, again, if someone or your listeners are looking for the names of stand-downs or the schedule for stand-downs in other parts of the country, we actually have a list of all those that are occurring throughout the year. Some are only one day, some 2 days, and some are an entire weekend.
And what link is that at your website, Cheryl?
Again, if you go to nchb.org,
right.
Just on the left-hand side, it's It's down about the ninth or tenth box. It just says stand down, and there's a box.
Oh, there it is. Yeah, sorry, I missed it.
Right there.
Uh-huh. And then
stand down guide, and below it there's a list of all of the stand downs throughout the country.
Oh, that's excellent. Joining us now is Michael Blecker. He's executive director of Swords to Plowshares. More than 30 years he has been advocating for veterans, and he's one himself. He served in Vietnam in 1967 to 1970. Michael, welcome to our program.
Thank you.
Thanks for the work that you do.
Sure.
I'd like to ask you for a moment to focus on the real hard-to-reach vets, those who we would never argue that they're voluntarily homeless, but who choose not to access services or change their situation for a variety of reasons.
Boy. Well, you know, of the homeless population, homeless vet population, more than half served during the Vietnam era, and I would say all those are have lots of issues. I mean, just look at their age. They're over 55 and closer to 60. They've got lots of health, primary health care issues. You know, they're maybe they have high blood pressure. Maybe they have diabetes. Maybe they have some been vulnerable to the HIV stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, their job skills have been weakened. They can't return to the construction trades, which many of them worked previously on. Not to mention issues around substance abuse, long term out of the workforce, alcoholism, post traumatic stress disorder. What more do you want on these guys? I mean, I think all those things really, you know, these guys. That's what war does. War is a very damaging experience, and it lasts well beyond the battlefield. So.
Well, Michael, hold there. We're going to have to go to a break here in a second, and I want to thank Cheryl for joining us on the program today. We're going to release her. And, Cheryl, please continue the work that you're doing. I want to direct people again to nchv.org. That's your website at the National Coalition for Homeless Veterans.
Okay, and thank you, Peter, again, for bringing attention to this issue. It's really important.
Well, it certainly is, and I'm happy to do so. Cheryl, keep up the good work.
All right. Thank you, Peter.
And Michael, stay with us. We'll return after a commercial break here. And we've got another guest who will join us later in the hour, and that is Amy Fairweather, who is involved in a special project related to Iraq veterans who are homeless in America. If you have a question or comment, we'd love to hear from you. Toll free, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
I'm Todd, the taxi driver, and today I want to talk to you about hate. Washington, D.C.'s latest diversion from the war in Iraq and the tanking economy is passing hate crime legislation. Members of the Republican Party and George Bush's White House would like you to believe that they consider all of us Americans to be one big happy family. I've actually heard them say in the last few days that whites, blacks, Hispanics, gays are all equal in their eyes, and that by giving legal protections to one class of America would be un-American. Good try, George, but I'm not buying it. While I believe that we are all equal, I also believe that some of us in America are at a higher risk of being victims of crimes. In the 1960s, America needed to pass civil rights legislation to protect African Americans who were disproportionately victims of crimes. They, homosexuals, need those additional protections. Call us here at KRXA and tell us what you think. This has been Todd the Taxi Driver.
Have you thought about owning more real estate but don't know where to turn? Are you interested in learning how to make good profit buying and selling real estate? Or do you want to learn how to let your tenants pay the mortgage while you enjoy the equity? If you want to learn the ins and outs of real estate investing, listen to The Real Estate Guys, Sunday nights at 5 on KRXA. You can own more real estate. The Real Estate Guys will show you how. Listen Sunday nights at 5 and on the web at realestateguysradio.com.
If you have a hard time losing weight, especially stubborn fat around the hips, thighs, and stomach, you need Affinity's Lose and Snooze. You can actually lose weight, even while you sleep. The Advanced Lose and Snooze formula in combination with the one-day diet plan will accelerate your weight loss dramatically. Lose and Snooze with natural ingredients is scientifically designed to help you lose up to 20 pounds a month while still eating your favorite foods. Start reshaping your body. Fit into that new wardrobe and lose those stubborn pounds safe and fast, even while you sleep. Try Lose and Snooze risk-free today. Buy two bottles of Lose and Snooze and you'll get a free supply of the one-day diet. If you are not completely satisfied with your weight loss within 30 days, simply send back any unused portion for a full refund of your purchase price. No questions asked. So start taking off those stubborn pounds today, even while you sleep. Call right now, 1-800-985-3668. That's 1-800-985-3668. Call now.
Doesn't it seem that the service is lacking at most service stations? Well, not at the Karma Shell at Rio Road and the Valero at Mid-Karma Valley Shopping Center. We take care of our customers. Karma Shell is happy to pump your gas and check under your hood at your request for no extra charge. At Mid-Karma Valley Valero, we offer expert car repair at reasonable rates with a fast turnaround. We do tune-ups, brakes, safety checks, and a 26-point inspection with an oil change. We specialize in Lexus and Toyota. Our mechanic is ASE certified. Call us at 624-0722. That's 624-0722. Karma Shell at Rio Road and Mid-Karma Valley Valero, putting the service back in service stations.
Tomorrow Matters, hosted by me, Deborah Lindsay, will be moving from Sundays to a daily spot Monday to Friday, 2 to 3 p.m. I'll still be bringing in the guests, and you'll still be calling in with your questions and ideas, and we'll still be working collectively to set the standards for a more sustainable future. But we'll be doing it 5 times a week. Starting May 14th, join me, Deborah Lindsay, right here on KRXA 540 a.m. for Tomorrow Matters, weekdays from 2 to 3 p.m., because for all of us, tomorrow really matters.
Talk radio. And it's interactive, too, which is a fancy way of saying he takes your phone calls. Toll free at 1-888-5-PETER-B. Fasten your seatbelt and let's take a ride in Peter B's America.
The Peter B. Collins Show is produced by Katrina Rill. Brian Urban is taking your calls today at 888-5-PETER-B as we explore issues related to veterans who are homeless in the United States of America.
Sometimes you start feeling so lost and lonely. Then you find it's all within your mind. Sometimes you think someone is the one and only. Can't you see it could be you and me? But if there's any doubt,
we continue now with Michael Blecker. He's executive director of Swords to Plowshares, and that's Blecker, not Brecker. He's not a musician. He's an activist, and he's been working on behalf of veterans.
A musician activist.
Are you a musician, too?
Not really. I like music, but what can I say? Peter, maybe I can take a moment just to tell the listeners about Swords to Plowshares, if I could.
You bet. I was going to ask you that, sir. Go right ahead.
Sure. Well, we were founded in 1974, one of these nonprofit community-based organizations, sort of grassroots, and really founded by primarily Vietnam veterans who felt pretty alienated by the VA and the healthcare system, and felt that their needs weren't going to be addressed unless they formed their own organization, and they did. And so we've been around since 1974. We have sort of a drop-in program where vets just come in off the street. We help them with all their issues right off the street, whatever, trying to get mental health care or drug and alcohol problems, et cetera.
And this is in San Francisco.
I'm sorry, this is in San Francisco. Yeah, our office is located in South of Market area at 1050 Howard Street.
Mm-hmm.
And we've always been in the Tenderloin or South of Market or the Mission, right sort of where vets can access our care.
Mm-hmm.
That's really important to be community-based. You got to be where the vets are. So we're there as sort of our drop-in frontline center. Then we have an employment program where we help veterans get jobs every year. We help about 150 veterans placed in unsubsidized employment. We also have a legal services component where veterans who, in order to receive the benefits, most veterans aren't able to get the help they need because you have to really negotiate a very difficult and complex bureaucracy known as the Veterans Administration to get your benefits. And so what we have is we hire attorneys and we allow them attorneys to represent veterans free of charge. And so those attorneys can help the veterans get entitled to disability compensation and other care.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have housing off-site. We've been able to some of the military base conversions, we've been able to make them available for veterans housing programs, both at the Presidio, where we have 100 units, a permanent supportive housing on the Presidio. We call it the Veterans Academy.
Mm-hmm.
And then both on Treasure Island, which was, again, a naval base, where actually a lot of Vietnam vets convalesced there during the Vietnam War.
That's right.
And now we've turned Treasure Island, we have about four sixplexes. So we have about 24 units, and we're able to place about 70 veterans in those units. And we also have a couple houses near City College. So we're able to take about 200 vets off the street and provide them ongoing care in addition to our other services.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at a listing here of some of the services you offer, and the line here reads, as medical problems resulting from exposure to Agent Orange, Vietnam era, and depleted uranium, which is a contemporary issue that started in Desert Storm
right. And
has continued in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Right.
I'm very concerned about this. It gets very little coverage,
right. And
the military and also the VA appear to be in full-scale denial.
Well, I mean, that was certainly true with Agent Orange, wasn't it? I don't know if you recall that struggle. For years, vets claimed that there are these various health effects by being exposed to this dioxin, and it was basically ignored by the VA. I remember one time the head of the VA claimed it was Agent Orange is no worse than teenage acne, the symptoms of it. And we really had to struggle and to get the both the medical establishment to accept the fact that this was very, very this Agent Orange, this herbicide that was basically destroying all vegetation and basically cleared up the jungle so that the enemy could be exposed, also did its trick on everybody around it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we struggled for that. And you have, you know, the weapons of modern warfare, right? Now you have this depleted uranium, which is basically all these armor and it's coated with this depleted uranium that's very powerful, and the missile projectiles are coated with it and allows it to be a very effective device in cutting through armor.
Mm-hmm.
So it's both a protects our armor and cuts through the other guy's armor. But the problem is it releases radioactivity, and they have terrible health effects on that. It's obvious, and
mm-hmm.
again, it's a struggle to get. To get the government to acknowledge this, in fact, is the case. And then, not just to acknowledge it, but to do the right thing, to research, treat, and compensate those who are victims of it. And each one of those are struggles,
mm-hmm.
to get them to acknowledge it happened, to get them to research and test it, to get them to treat and compensate those who are affected by it.
Yeah. And you know, I've seen several documentaries about this. I've talked with people who are active on the issue. And the criteria or the symptoms are quite clear. And yet the military just continues to deny the issue and deny benefits to those who are suffering while the numbers continue to rise. And we still haven't dealt with the murky Gulf War syndrome, which may have been DU-related, but again, because of the denial and obfuscation, we don't really know even, 12 years hence.
That's correct. I mean, it's, you know, the military has a certain, their priority is a command culture, and they're basically dealing with fighting wars, and when your time of war is over, you know, there's not much care you're going to get from the Department of Defense. They move on, and so it's really imperative that the people pay attention, and our government pays attention to what happens during the course of war. War is a very expensive proposition, causes a lot of harm,
mm-hmm.
and in each of those cases, you know, we're devising, you know, whether it's chemical warfare or, you know, whatever it is. You know, it has its repercussions.
Michael Blecker is with us, Executive Director of Swords to Plowshares there in San Francisco. And their website is stp-sf.org, stp-sf.org. Now, given these issues, and we know that there are thousands of veterans returning from the war in Iraq and Afghanistan who are severely injured, some in a kind of cruel way, lived because of the protective armor and other steps that have been taken, but they've lost limbs or had brain damage. The IEDs are an unanticipated cause of injuries and death to our service members. And so as these people are processed out of the military medical system, handed off to the VA, and shipped home to their communities, there's a real problem in the continuity of care, isn't there?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, they again, it's been brought to people's attention by the poor families that have to, they're stuck with these situations when their sons and daughters come back and are struggling and not getting the care they need. The idea of having some sort of transition that's meaningful. So when people get ready, so when soldiers have health problems, that they're acknowledged and they're treated and taken care of. And when they get out, they're handed over in a seamless manner so that there's no disruptions in both their treatment and their compensation. And clearly, as the media has exposed in these articles, whether we're talking about the scandal Walter Reed or the fact that there are 600,000 disability claims that are in the pipeline and haven't been resolved, or whether all these veterans who are being diagnosed as having trauma and not being cared for in the military, this is not being done. It's almost scandalous. In fact, it is a scandal. So what are we going to do about it? And that's part of, I think, your program is to just continue to draw attention until something meaningful happens.
Well, I'm happy to do that, but I also feel that there's an obligation, and it's not limited to our government. I do believe the government bears primary responsibility, but I also think that there's a great op-ed in today's New York Times written by Bob Herbert, and it profiles Paul Rykoff, who founded Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. He's been on our program many times, and a man I have great respect for.
Mm-hmm.
And Rykoff's point is they're meeting, at some restaurant near Times Square, and he said, the military and their families are sacrificing. They're participating in this war, and the rest of us are going shopping.
Right.
And, pursuing American Idol and the daily diversions of our lives.
Right.
And so I don't let us off the hook, Michael Blecher.
That's true.
I think that we need to put pressure on government to provide the services that it can and should, but we also need to rally in our communities and not create another syndrome where Vietnam vets returned and felt that the nation had left them.
Well, Peter, I will say that people have responded from the standpoint of being able to separate their feelings from the war to the separate their feelings from those who are the warriors,
mm-hmm.
unlike Vietnam. I think that was an important lesson people drew from that. So one thing, people at least are returning to their communities when they feel like they're getting support. They're not being judged from the standpoint, the war's not being prosecuted in a successful manner. It must be your fault, and et cetera, et cetera. I think people actually respect the sacrifice, whether it's obviously not a shared sacrifice, and that's a real problem. But the fact that, they have separated those feelings, I think that's really important.
Mm-hmm.
But here you have a situation in Iraq, and I'm sure Amy will discuss this further in your next segment, where you have these repeated deployments and this stop loss. And this, we clearly cannot wage this war without putting these incredible burdens on the current armed forces and the National Guard.
Yeah, a year has become 15 months, and they're now threatening to turn deployments a standard tour into 18 months.
And repeated deployments. I mean, when I was in Vietnam, I had one tour duty, and I had to voluntarily extend my tour duty if I wanted to go beyond my 12 months. But nowadays, all bets are off. You can be deployed. In fact, most soldiers right now who are stationed in the war zone have been there 2-3 times.
Well, and the impact you're describing is even greater for those who were reservists or National
Absolutely.
Guard members who never expected to be called up for repeated and extended tours in a war zone. They thought they might have to mop up a riot or a natural disaster.
Right. I mean, that's part of, you engage in this struggle, or you engage in a war and occupy a country. It's an enormous endeavor. And so to pretend that we can do it without, say, a draft, right, without people suffering, or all we have to do is, continue to consume and buy, that's a false promise. That's not the way it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, number one, how can people support Swords to Plowshares?
Oh, boy. Well, we're a nonprofit, And we could really use volunteers. We can use supporters. I encourage everyone to call us, or we have a website. You know, we will find out who you are and get you plugged in some way, shape, or form. And, you know, there's a lot of veterans in San Francisco. There's probably 1,500 to 2,000 homeless vets.
Yeah.
The problem is there's a growing number of this new generation of vets who may end up homeless if something more isn't done.
The website, again, is stp-sf.org.
Yeah.
Swords to Plowshares, stp-sf.org. Got about another 30 seconds. What would you like to close with, Michael Blecker?
Well, I want to thank you for giving me this opportunity. I just want to say that, you know, I think we have to, you know, just do the right thing and force political leadership to face this issue. War is an expensive proposition. And you should support those soldiers who bear the sacrifice as if they were your sons and your daughters. And what would you want for them? And that should be the basis of what our support is.
Yeah. Michael, thanks for your work.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it. Michael Blecker, Executive Director of Swords to Plowshares. Coming up next, his colleague Amy Fairweather is going to join us. She heads the Iraq Project at STP, Swords to Plowshares. And we'll get more specific about the plight of Iraq veterans who wind up on the streets of the United States. If you want to join us, there's room for your call. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. I remain your humble host, Peter B. Collins.
This is Frank Don. On Sunday evenings at 7 p.m. here on KRXA 540 a.m., join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour, a live call-in program to discuss astrology, the astrology of the world, and your own personal astrology. Let me answer your questions, and let me teach you how astrology can help you make better life choices. Here on KRXA 540 a.m. from 7 to 8 every Sunday evening, join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour.
Hello, I'm here to tell you about Central Avenue Bakery in beautiful Pacific Grove. Every day we feature the finest and freshest healthy whole grain foods with vegan and wheat-free options for those so inclined. We mill our own organic, fresh whole grain flour daily. Galina, our Russian pastry chef, turns those fresh whole grains into delicious masterpieces. Muffins, cakes, cookies, pies, banana chocolate bars, macaroons. She adds new items all the time. We also have a variety of whole grain breads, fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey in the old Granary building, just two blocks from the aquarium, or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Hey, what are you having for lunch?
My personal chef is making it now.
Your personal chef?
Yeah, the lunch lady in the school cafeteria.
Kids should think of me as their personal chef. Well-balanced meals at school are very important for their bodies and their minds. Make sure they eat right and take advantage of the personal chef in their school cafeteria.
Stay fit, eat right. Looking good, California, is a public service of the California School Nutrition Association. For help with your family's nutrition, visit stayfiteatright.org.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. And joining us now is Amy Fairweather, Director of Swords to Plowshares Iraq Veteran Project. Amy, thanks for being with us here on the program today.
Thanks for having us.
Oh, it's our pleasure, and it's very important work that you do, and I'm happy to highlight it and hope that listeners who know or are veterans in need will find the services they need and try to, you know, develop a healthier situation. And there's just a lot of work to be done. I want to focus on your efforts there to help returning Iraq veterans. Give us a sense of what you've been dealing with so far. The war is 4 years old, and we have, of course, hundreds of thousands of people who've cycled through the war zones.
1.5 million, to be exact.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, a little bit over 1.5 million. Well, my answer is twofold. One, we are seeing Iraq veterans here at Swords. Not so many who are homeless. Our colleagues around the country are seeing more. But this project is not only about changing our services to be more proactive and catch people earlier and prevent the kind of suffering we see in our Vietnam-era clients, but also to look at what the issues are and promote policy and programs in California and throughout the country that will mitigate the damage. And I just wanted to jump in quickly when you talked about what people can do.
Mm-hmm.
One thing is there is a very good piece of legislation, the Lane Evans Veterans Health and Benefits Improvement Act of 2007. In the Senate, it's Senate Bill 117. In the House, it's 1354. And this would go a long way to making sure that every veteran, when they return from a deployment, gets one-on-one personalized mental health screening. That would really take care of a lot of the stigma that keeps people from seeking help. It would ensure medical records were given to the vets when they get home. It would ensure comprehensive data was collected and the reports were made. So this is one way that we can codify some of the ideas that we'd like to see happen.
Amy, let me ask you about this. There's a powerful cover story on the latest issue of The Nation magazine, and its writer Joshua Kors was with us the other day. It profiles many cases, but most notably specialist John Town.
Mm-hmm.
And he was injured by an IED in Iraq. He had severe damage, some brain injuries, and he lost most of his hearing. And he went before one of these medical boards, and they made him an offer that if he took a discharge, that they would wipe out some money that he owed the Army, I guess a signing bonus or something like that. So he did so, and it turns out that they made a ruling that his deafness and other injuries were the result of a personality disorder issue that predated his service in the military. And this is stunning, shocking, and shameful that they would attempt to, you know, reach into the past and find some excuse to deny benefits and services to a man who clearly was injured as a result of his service.
Yeah, I mean, we hear about this happening, his case, and of course there was the coverage of it happening at Fort Carson again and again. I mean, this is one of those cases where we're not willing to pay for the enduring costs of war, and those are the enduring costs of war. Another thing that's happening, which I find very disturbing, is, you know, this war is a recipe for PTSD. If you wanted to conjure up in a Petri dish the best way to cause PTSD, this would be it. Repeated tours, extended tours, 24/7, urban combat, not knowing who the enemy is, and enormous exposure to really horrifying trauma. There you have it. That's the recipe, and that's what's happening.
You're right.
There's also tremendously high rates of traumatic brain injury because of exposure to traumatic blasts, which really can diminish capacity in many ways. Both of these conditions, often they're co-occurring, and often the symptoms of the conditions are behavior that can get you booted out of the military. So you have people who are, you know, self-medicating or can't remember what they're doing, and so they're, you know, they're messing up their duty calls, or are angry and get in bar fights or other kinds of fights. And what it is the symptoms of their service-related injury. But instead, they get written up for bad conduct, and they get bad conduct discharges or other than honorable discharges. So this is another way where people will be denied forever the benefits that are that they have earned due to their service connection. But instead of getting a diagnosis of PTSD, they're getting bad conduct discharges.
So is there an opportunity for somebody in John Towne's position to appeal or reopen the case?
Now, that had to do with his military discharge,
mm-hmm.
With his medical separation. I think it can be very difficult to change those diagnoses, but certainly people can try. Much more familiar with the VA process in
mm-hmm.
which if people are denied benefits because of a less than honorable discharge or bad conduct discharge, you can bring a claim for a discharge upgrade and have that fixed, or you can go through the VA process and have a change in character of service.
I see.
It's not easy, and it's best to have really qualified attorneys, which we have here at Swords to Plowshares,
mm-hmm.
And we can offer those services to Iraq vets. Also, services with regard to just regular Veterans Affairs disability claims, which, of course, is a very important income stream for someone
mm-hmm.
who's disabled.
Yeah.
So there are ways, but it's very, very difficult.
Amy, just about a minute remaining. What would you like to add here of note for Iraq veterans?
To continue on the theme that Michael said, you know, these are the enduring costs of war. The other thing that's very important is, you know, there are some very good services at the VA. There's some very good people on the ground and some very good clinicians and people at the vet centers. There aren't enough of them. And even if there were tons more today, they still couldn't handle the influx of the Iraq veterans who are coming home. And some Iraq veterans are not going to go to VA facilities. So it's really incumbent on the community to come together, and providers and churches and mental health folks and behavioral health folks and law enforcement to come together and acknowledge these issues and find ways to serve these people and to help them in this very difficult transition.
Yeah. Amy, thanks for talking with us today, and thanks for the work you do for our vets.
Okay, thank you.
That's Amy Fairweather. Visit stp-sf.org. That's the website for Swords to Plowshares. Also, nchv.org for the National Coalition for Homeless Veterans. Coming up next, the Free Speech Zone. We open up the phone lines to take your calls at 888-5-PETER-B. And later next hour, Bob Borisage will join us. He moderated a debate today between neocon Bill Kristol and progressive Bob Kuttner. We'll have some amazing sound bites from that for you next hour on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Today's program pre-recorded.
The healthcare system is broken. That doesn't mean you have to be. Capitola Physical Therapy helps you return to the level of function you need with skilled personal attention. Whether it's golf, tennis, walking, or simply getting out of bed and maintaining your balance. Capitola Physical Therapy understands, cares, and knows how to help. Call Capitola Physical Therapy at 475-1200. That's 475-1200.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
You know,
the show on KRXA 540.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
A looming showdown over the war.
We are fully funding the troops. What we are not fully funding is a bankrupt policy in Iraq.
Huge plea deal by the maker of OxyContin.
It is very important that this company be brought to justice.
I'm Barry Bagnetto in Washington.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. The House has voted down a bill that would have required the withdrawal of U.S. combat troops from Iraq within 9 months, but right now it's considering a measure that has a better chance. It would fund the war through July, but make additional funding contingent on reports from President Bush certifying that progress is being made.
We are offering a way for the president to get the rest of his money. All he has to do is issue these three reports and then go to the Congress and try to persuade the Congress that his case is better than those who have a different view.
Wisconsin Democrat David Obey is defying a veto threat.
I'm Mark Knoller of the White House. The V word again passed the president's lips as he vowed to veto the Democrats' war funding bill, calling 60-day funding cycles piecemeal, haphazard, and a bad idea.
You know, it's one thing to have a good, honest debate about the way forward in Iraq. It's another thing to put our troops right in the middle of that debate.
But in a move toward compromise, Mr. Bush said he'd negotiate putting benchmarks for progress in a funding bill. But Democratic leaders were quick to say that unless there are consequences if the benchmarks are not met, it's meaningless.
Now this.
Our next life exercise, fixing copier paper jam. 4, 3, 2, 1. Grab copier part mark number 6. And pull, and pull. Grab deeply jammed paper. Lift, and tug. Press reset button quickly. And press, and press. Now kick and press, and kick and press, and kick, and press.
Life is exercise. Snickers Marathon is energy. Great tasting, nutritious, long-lasting energy for the demands of your day. Grab a Snickers Marathon in the energy bar aisle.
If your car or truck is ready for new tires before your wallet is, hurry to your Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealership.
I can help. Take a tip for me.
Buy tires now and pay later with our genuine service credit card. Plus, bring in any competitor's current price ad on the name brand tires we sell within 30 days of purchase, and we'll beat that price, guaranteed. New tires, installed by four trained experts. Buy now and pay later. See your Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealership for details today. Offer ends June 30th.
It's easy to turn a blind eye to trouble when money's rolling in. Now some of Purdue Pharma's huge profits from selling OxyContin will be pouring out in a settlement with the Justice Department. CBS News correspondent Barry Bagnato has the story.
It was promoted as a wonder drug, a less addictive painkiller. Lies, the federal government says, in a plea deal that forces the maker of OxyContin, Purdue Pharma, and three current and former executives to pay more than $700 million in criminal and civil penalties. U.S. Attorney John Brownlee.
Even though the company was warned by health professionals, the media, and members of its own sales force that OxyContin was being abused and causing harm, Purdue continued to push a fraudulent marketing campaign.
Dr. Sidney Wolf of WorstPills.org.
This company is paying for misleading doctors and really causing a lot of deaths and injuries.
Several hundred deaths, the government says, and it blames OxyContin and the company for dramatically higher crime rates. Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Washington.
In a separate agreement with 26 states and the District of Columbia, Purdue Pharma will pay $19.5 million to settle complaints that encourage doctors to up the dosage of OxyContin. That's the Platte River rushing through Farley, Missouri. Rain's fallen, rivers and streams have spilled over dozens of levees. Forecasters say it'll take days for the floodwaters to recede, but along the Missouri River, CBS News correspondent Cynthia Bowers reports some towns might get a break.
The Corps of Engineers says today that because so much water has sloughed off along the way and flooded towns upstream like Levesey, like Lexington, like Napoleon, like Wellington, that means less water is moving downstream. So the projections for flood crests, while still over flood level, have been dropped significantly by 4 feet or more.
It's too late for the town of Big Lake, where most homes are submerged up to their rooftops. In the southeast, firefighters hope that Storm Andrea offshore would give them some rain. Instead, as CBS News correspondent Kelly Cobier reports, they're just getting more wind.
Wind has been the problem since Monday, fanning fires and blowing smoke across the dry forests and swamps of Florida and southern Georgia. About 300 square miles have burned in the two states. More than half that total is from the Waycross fire in Georgia. It's been burning for more than 3 weeks now and is the largest in state history.
Two boys have been arrested and charged with starting smaller fires in Georgia. They're being treated as juveniles and they've been released to their parents. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. When your washing machine makes a mess, you get a plumber. When your hair is a mess, you go to a hairdresser. But where do you go when there's a mess on your floors? Visit an Orrick store. We're the only place for lightweight vacuums, expert advice for a cleaner, healthier home, and really great deals. Call 1-800-989-4200 or click Orrick.com or drive on over today. Whatever mess you're in, we'll get you out of it.
Whoa,
Chances are your old computer can't run all the latest software. Get into Office Depot today for a huge assortment of the newest computers and software, plus wireless printers, flat panel monitors, memory solutions, and more. Don't risk slowing down your business. Let Office Depot lend you a hand.
Well, Office Depot, here to lend you a hand.
Today's program is pre-recorded.
Live, unscripted, and unrehearsed,
of course.
It's the unpredictable Peter B. Collins Show, originating from that dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Call in anytime toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and add your voice to Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to this hour of the Peter B. Collins Show. Coming up a little bit later, we're going to talk with John Diaz. He is the editorial page editor of the San Francisco Chronicle, and he recently discovered that he is on the TSA watch list. Every time he goes to the airport, they give him the third degree. And we're going to see if he's been able to discover why. At the airports, they tell him, hey, you're on the watch list. Why? Well, nobody's allowed to tell him. We'll explore that a little bit later this hour. About an hour from now, Cindy Sheehan returns to our program. She's still waiting for George W. Bush to find time in his busy schedule to talk to her. Returning to our program today is Mike Lux, who heads American Family Voices. He's a Democratic communications guy who worked in the Clinton administration and does a lot of good work these days. Mike, how are you?
I'm good, Peter. How are you?
Not too bad. Nice to talk with you again.
Yeah, it's great. Great to be back on.
Got a couple of things I wanted to work over with you, and one of the things I've been looking for is a well-informed and credible Democrat who is opposed to Dennis Kucinich's bill of impeachment, because I've been trying to understand why the leadership is so resistant to it. Not that I think that it's a slam dunk or that it should be the first priority, but simply because I believe that accountability is important, that this is the first opportunity to exercise oversight and to bring to bear the full extent of the law on those in the Bush administration who appear to have violated the law. And I want to know just what your position is. What do you think?
Well, you know, I'm not for pushing that right now, and I'll tell you why. It's a political maneuver. And Dennis knows that. I mean, he knows that it's not going to pass. Everybody knows that even if all the Democrats in the House and the Senate voted for it, George Bush would still be in office. And so it's purely about politics. So the question is, since it's purely about politics, is it a good political thing to do? I actually come at this with the experience of having managed the outside campaign against the impeachment for Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
I was working at the time at People for the American Way, and People for the American Way works on constitutional issues. And we took on the impeachment battle when a lot of other liberal groups didn't want to touch it. They thought somehow they would be sullied if they said something or did something. But we took it on, and we did a whole multi-million-dollar campaign to fight against it. And so I come to it from that experience. What I learned from that is that the American people really get deeply uncomfortable with the idea of impeachment very fast. They didn't like what Bill Clinton did. They didn't like the fact that he had lied about it. But they thought the Republicans were way out of bounds, because they, you know, when you did focus groups, when you did polling, what people would say is, look, we elected the guy, we don't want to kick him out. He'd have to do a hell of a lot worse than this to be kicked out. Now, the pro-impeachment folks argue, you know, with good merit, that, of course, Bush has done a hell of a lot worse than...
I wish we had a blue dress to introduce as evidence, you know, and there have been protesters. I saw one, a woman carrying a sign at a protest in Washington saying, would somebody please give Bush a BJ so we can impeach him?
Right. I know, I've seen those posters, too, which are in fact, I saw one poster which had a sign in front of a church saying that, which I thought was pretty funny.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think that right now we have Bush completely on the defensive. We have Bush, I mean, we're holding him accountable every day with congressional hearings on all kinds of subjects. We're pushing back against him on all the different issues that we want. Why throw something like impeachment that automatically, raises suspicions and hackles of people and makes us seem more partisan?
Well, I have some answers. First of all, because Gonzalez is still the attorney general, and it appears that despite his, lies and dissembling under oath twice before the Senate Judiciary Committee, that the president is not inclined to replace him. We have an administration that wants to pursue more wiretaps and has now informed us that despite what Gonzalez told us in January, that they don't think they really can submit every request to the FISA court. So here we have intentional lawbreaking by the administration. And Mike, I am less interested in the politics of this than I am in the constitutional issues. I believe that we have a rogue administration. And if we do not lay down markers and hold them accountable for what they have done to date, that they will attempt to do more, and that it will embolden future administrations to break the law with impunity. And so I understand the misgivings. I do understand that impeachment could possibly become an albatross to Democrats and could cost some people elections in 2008. It's a wobbly thing. It's very hard to predict how it would play out. And we know that the Republicans are good opportunists and that their noise machine could frame and play it in a way that would not advantage Democrats. That said, I don't care. I think that it's more important to protect our democracy and to set a standard for America and the world that we will not tolerate this kind of activity by our elected leaders.
Well, I think that's a great case. I think that's a compelling case. And by the way, I'm all for, especially as the evidence comes out, I'm all for impeaching Gonzalez.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that son of a bitch lied to Congress under oath. He did all kinds of illegal things. In my view, this is what's going to come out, is that he did all kinds of illegal things at the Justice Department.
Mm-hmm.
And if he does not resign or Bush doesn't fire him, I'd be all for going after him. That's obviously a side point. But I just wanted to say that.
But Mike, I think that's part of the big picture of accountability. And I agree with you about Gonzalez, and I think that we've got him on some relatively minor issues, because to me, the torture policy, the NSA spying, and many of the other law-breaking efforts of the Bush administration that have his fingerprints all over them are cause for his dismissal and or prosecution. So I'm with you there. And so why do we draw the line that we can go into this political process to remove Gonzalez because it's so clear what he's done wrong, yet I believe it's equally clear what Cheney and Bush have done that's run afoul of the law and their own oaths of office. And again, I'm not sure that impeachment would lead to their removal, but I think it's important to set that standard and say we will not tolerate this kind of behavior.
Well, I understand what you're saying. I just think there's a lot of different ways that we can say we will not tolerate this behavior, and that we can hold them accountable on very specific things, on very specific issues, and push back on them in all kinds of different ways. And to say the things that they were doing are not in any way things that should have been done or should be done. I think that there's a variety of legal things that we can do with them. I just think at the bottom line is when you have an elected official, and you could argue, of course, that they stole the elections, but since we can't prove that, we can't prove it. But we can prove it in 2000.
Let's call them office holders.
Office holders. but I mean, they went through the election process. They were certified to be the winners of the election. I think it's a different kind of thing than an appointed official like Gonzalez to say we're going to remove the person who the American people elected to be president. I just think you have to have an incredibly high standard of proof and the political will to do it, because it's a political decision. You know, whether you remove an elected official is a completely political decision, and right now we aren't even close to having the political will to do that. So I guess my point is, given that, why go through the process? And I understand where you're coming from too, and mm-hmm. You make a very eloquent case for why we should do it. I just think you can hold him accountable in a variety of different ways that hurt him more, that get at him more, and that make him more accountable.
But threatening him with potential removal from office? I mean, what could control his behavior more effectively?
He knows it's an empty threat. That's my problem with it. I'd rather do stuff that is not an empty threat. I would rather go at him more aggressively on specific issues. I would rather subpoena the hell out of him. I would rather go after indictments of his appointed officials and impeachment of his appointed officials. I would rather get aggressive in those ways where we probably can get something done, rather than do something that he knows is an empty threat.
Well, I understand that as the votes would be counted today, it does appear to be an empty threat. But it's interesting, Mike, because 2 years ago, Cindy Sheehan came on the program before she had even gone to Crawford and set up Camp Casey and become a well-known mother of a lost Iraqi veteran. And I offered kind of the same remarks that, sure, I think these guys, are criminals and we should deal with them, but I don't think impeachment is practical. And she said, Peter, people said that about Nixon. And Mike, I was starting my youthful talk show career at the time of Watergate, and that's an episode I know a whole lot about.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it didn't appear that Nixon was really impeachable until the investigations went forward and the Irvin Committee unearthed a lot of the information. And ultimately, it was principled Republicans who persuaded Nixon to resign instead of facing impeachment. And I believe that that is potentially possible, particularly as we get closer to a day of reckoning for those Republican electeds in 2008. I got to take a break, so I'll let you respond to that afterward. And we're going to take some calls, too. If you have a comment, join us right now. 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372 is our toll-free number. We're talking with Mike Lux from American Family Voices, right here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares. The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
All right, folks, tale of the traffic on this Thursday. Salinas, southbound, 101 out, Sanborn. We have a two-vehicle crash. It is on the right shoulder there, and it appears that is our only real big problem. Well, let's take a look at Scotts Valley. Northbound 17 at Vine Hill Road. We have a stalled big rig blocking the off-ramp. CHP is on scene. We do have a major problem in Menlo Park we're going to tell you about. Southbound 280 at Sandhill. The off-ramp has been shut down due to a dump truck that overturned, spilled a large amount of dirt and rocks. The westbound on-ramp is also closed as well. Other than that, let's take a look at Salinas. No major problems or stalls or accidents to report there, so that certainly is some good news. This report brought to you by NBC 11 News at 5. Today at 5, how are the how bionic arms help stroke patients?
I mean, come on, Mike Lux. We even have the theme music for it.
I like it.
So I had to run to a break there and cut you off. What did you want to add to the remarks I was making there?
Here's my response to this. When Sam Irvin started the investigations, those were not impeachment hearings. Those were not committee hearings about whether the president should be impeached.
That is correct.
They took a long time to sort of lay out the case. I'm not arguing that we shouldn't investigate him. I'm not arguing we shouldn't hold investigative hearings, you know, up the wazoo. I think we absolutely should. I think we should go at him very aggressively. But I don't think we should start with impeachment.
Okay, and I'm with you there. I believe that it should be on the table, just like all options are on the table, Bush says, about Iran or anything else, and that Conyers should be permitted to let the Judiciary Committee run with this. And if it leads to a bill of impeachment and it's voted out of the committee, then the House itself can evaluate that. And it takes a very high standard, of course, to bring charges of impeachment. And I just think it should not be precluded. I don't have the result in mind and believe that, you know, Democrats should drop everything and just impeach these SOBs. I think that, though, it should not be left out or ignored.
Well, you know, given that, I'm not sure we actually disagree. I just don't think that's where we should start.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I think if we get there, you know, if that's where the process leads us, you know, All good with me, but I think that when you're doing something political, you know, and again, that's what impeachment is. It's a political tool that Congress has.
It's also a constitutional tool, and I don't think it's optional when the evidence suggests that we have a president and or vice president who have, you know, actively and intentionally violated the law.
Well, it's always optional. We've had plenty of presidents who violated the law over the history of our country, so it's not like, you know, I mean, it's a vote up or down. That's mm-hmm. why I say it's political.
All right, let's talk to Laird.
And we don't disagree. If that's where the process ends up,
mm-hmm.
great. I just don't think that's where we should start.
Okay, Laird in Eureka, welcome. You're on the air with Peter B. and Mike Lux.
Hi, Peter. Hi, Mike.
Hey.
I called the other day and said I didn't believe that impeachment was going to happen, and this is the reason. This is what we're hearing now, and I'm not trying to attack your guest
mm-hmm.
because I hear this at work. I hear this wherever. You know, oh, we don't have enough time. He's going to be out of office pretty soon. Every day this guy is in office is a new crisis. When is it going to stop?
Well, and we were at this point in Bill Clinton's second term when the impeachment bus got rolling.
Yeah, that is true, yeah.
So the Republicans didn't say, oh, gosh, he's going to be out in another, you know, 14 months. Who cares?
Yeah, I don't know about Bill Clinton. I'm not sure that anybody even wanted to throw him out of office. I think that was all about embarrassment. This guy...
No, I think Richard Mellon Scaife wanted to throw him out of office.
Well, I'm sure there were a few.
I mean, he spent millions of dollars to try to achieve that.
Right. But this isn't, to me, this is not a political issue. This is a criminal issue.
Well, Mike, you want to respond?
Well, I certainly understand where you're coming from. And partly what we're talking about is semantics. But to me, any issue in front of Congress, any issue that requires a vote of Congress, up or down vote, to me, that's how you define a political issue. It's not, these guys are not judges. They're not juries. They're politicians, and they have to vote on it. They don't go behind a closed chamber and confer as a judge would or as a jury would.
Yeah.
They're politicians, and they do it all in the public light. And that's why I say it's a political process.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're in politics, you know, you have to understand where the votes are and what the dynamics are. And that's all I'm saying.
All right. Laird, thank you for your call. Let me jump to line two here, and it's not even up on the screen there. Who's with us here? Gary. Hi, Gary.
Hello, Peter.
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
Yeah. I'm stunned, actually, to hear these remarks. I've got a son that's in Iraq right now, and he has the courage to go there, but this guy's worried about the votes and this and that. I want to stand in front of the White House and just scream, everybody, get out now. And I just, to hear this guy just gesture, and I think you're just spot on, Peter. And I just can't imagine why this guy doesn't just say, hey, I need to get to work. There's business that has to start now.
Okay, Gary, I'm out of time here, but I thank you for your call. Mike, a final word?
Well, you know, I totally agree with the man who wants us to get out now. It's a matter of, you know, when you're in a democracy, you have to figure out how you do that.
Mike, I'm out of time here. Thanks for joining me today.
Peter.
Yep, enjoyed the conversation. We'll continue in a moment here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Locally owned, the Ugly Mug Coffee House in SoCal Village. Always lively, always wired. We serve the best organic, shade-grown coffees, loose leaf teas, original bar drinks, and delectable goodies in friendly community atmosphere. Open every day, 6 a.m. till 9 p.m., complete with music, Wi-Fi, and the craziest regulars in Santa Cruz. Meet your friends or just bring yourself to the Ugly Mug, SoCal Drive at Porter Street, for lively conversations and the best cappuccino in town. Hey, what do you want? Rare frickin' sunshine? Delicious.
The Ugly Mug, SoCal Drive and Porter Street in SoCal.
I'm Todd Hurlbert, and I invite you to listen to The Week in Politics at our new time, 7 p.m. Monday nights. We're Monterey's hardest-hitting political hot talk. We cover local politics, also tell you what's going on in Washington, D.C. And most importantly, we take your calls and find out what you think. So if you haven't listened to us before, find out what we're all about. Monday night, 7 p.m. It's The Week in Politics. See you there.
Message finally received. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. At a White House meeting, the president finally got the message from his own party. Show results or come home.
I don't know if he's gotten that kind of opinion before in such a frank and no-holds-barred way.
GOP Representative Ray LaHood of Illinois, who told CNN the president appeared to take it to heart.
I think he was a little, I don't know if surprised is the right word, probably maybe sober.
Representative Tom Davis of Virginia told WTOP that some members even dared to utter the L word.
Members are saying, you know, my constituents don't care if we lose this war. They want out of this at this point.
But does leaving have to mean losing? I think of what the insurgents did.
When they saw us coming, what'd they do? They left, or let us think that they left. Well, let's suppose the president, now that he's heard from his own party, decides maybe the conditions for success have been met. Let's come home and have a giant, joyous homecoming. And yes, as we leave, there are pictures of triumphant Al-Qaeda fighters shooting their weapons in the air, praising Allah for the great victory. Except then, those Al-Qaeda fighters start evaporating. Some of them evaporate with the help of a serendipitous bullet. Some evaporate because of a cell phone. You know how sometimes you think you're choosing the vibrate option, but by mistake you choose the explode option. And the world will wonder, how is it possible that the Americans leave and suddenly it's actually tougher for Al-Qaeda to operate? But that would be one of those mysteries that's never quite solved. Notice.
Computer security threats such as spam, spyware, viruses, and pop-up ads invade your business every day through email, web browsing, and instant messaging. And the fastest way to stop them is with Barracuda Network's spam firewalls and web filters. Call 888-ANTI-SPAM now and ask for your free trial. Barracuda Network's firewalls are affordable and easy to use. That's why over 35,000 leading companies are using the award-winning firewall. Try a Barracuda firewall for free. Call 888-ANTI-SPAM, 888-ANTI-SPAM, or go online to barracuda.com.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
Come on in and you will see the Central Avenue Bakery. Smell the bread, try the scones, everything so tasty you want to take it all home. Vegetarian is a good affair. We make our meals in a kosher kitchen. I'll make mine falafel with hummus stew. A side of couscous and a Baba Ghanoush, yeah. Open at 7 every day. Have a cup of coffee or your morning latte. Come on in and sit right down. It's the friendliest place in town. Central Avenue Bakery in PG.
For an unforgettable omelet experience, visit the Central Avenue Bakery today. 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey, PG.
Welcome to Peter B's America.
What happens when you go to the airport these days? You get in that long line, take off your shoes, remove your belt, hope your pants don't fall down as you go through the metal detector. Well, the humiliation and delays that average people face have become a fact of life, and I guess we've kind of gotten used to it. I still bristle at the idea that I can't carry liquids on the plane of more than 3 ounces. When we know that the liquid bomber Bojinka 2 plot that was broken up in London last year was barely, you know, any threat to the United States. Despite the way it was played by the Bush administration, it was a minor threat by a group of people who hadn't even advanced their conspiracy far enough to get passports and airline tickets for this alleged effort that we were told was ready to be unleashed within a week or two of its disclosure. So I'm one of those people who feels that the way we have hardened our airports is a kind of empty gesture. Because, sure, hardening the cockpit doors and some of the other steps that have been taken do make sense. But I've seen too many grandmas, too many moms traveling with 3 kids who were sent to the extra special, what I call the Procto line, for the extra thorough investigation before they were permitted to pass to the gate. And it's just it's a waste of time and money, and I don't believe that it makes our air system more secure. Well, add to that the no-fly lists and the TSA watch lists, and they appear to be a little bit different. Ted Kennedy, the senator from Massachusetts, is on the no-fly list. And every time he goes to the airport, he gets the third degree. And you'd think that a guy like him, who's so easy to identify, wouldn't have that problem. But it does occur. We're working right now to reach John Diaz, who is the editorial page editor of the San Francisco Chronicle. He wrote a first-person piece that was published in the Chron last week
that indicates that he has recently had problems at airports, and it turns out he's on the TSA watch list. John Diaz joins us now. Hello, John.
Hi, Peter. How you doing today?
I'm better than you. In fact, I'm going to the airport tomorrow night, and I don't expect to have the kind of problems that you've been encountering with the fine uniformed people from the Transportation Security Agency.
Yeah, well, don't be so sure until you try printing out your boarding pass from home, because that was my first clue that something was wrong.
Yeah. So walk us through this. You were having no problems, and, you know, for business and your work, you probably fly, a few times a month?
Not a few times a month, but usually a couple times a month.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, it's only really been within the last month that I've had problems, but two separate airlines, Southwest and then United, I tried, as I always do, to print a boarding pass from home, and then was unable to do that. And then, of course, when you get to the airport, since I was only doing carry-on baggage, you figure, well, I couldn't do it from home, but maybe I could do it from the kiosk.
Mm-hmm.
Was not able to do that, got the same thing, see, ticket agent at counter. And in both times, the ticket agent, I was asked, what's the delay about, was told that it was because I was on the watch list, quote-unquote. I didn't really think much of it the first time at Southwest, but the second time the agent was a little more specific and said you're on the TSA watch list, so you'd have to ask them if you want to know why you weren't able to board in the normal routine way.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, the people at the airport either don't know or can't tell you why you're on the TSA watch list.
My understanding of this, Peter, after doing a little research into it, is they don't know. And in fact, they don't even know if you've been flagged, whether it's because you're actually on the watch list or because you have a similar name or birth date or other characteristic of someone else on the watch list that they think may be trying to board.
Mm-hmm.
They actually don't know it. And there are actually, there are times, my understanding, again, some other, research and reporting that's been done on this is a lot of times the TSA, via computer or sometimes via phone, will ask them certain questions, like if it's a Peter B. Collins, gee, does he have a identifying tattoo or does he have a beard, that kind of thing.
Is it the bald one? Yeah.
They will answer that question. but again, you just don't know. And so to be clear, I mean, I don't actually know that I am on the TSA watch list, because they will neither confirm nor deny whether you are.
Mm-hmm.
They'll give you a process for appealing, but you don't really know if you're actually off the watch list until, suddenly, you can fly easily again.
Well, and you probably have some misgivings about pursuing this. I mean, I would compare it to the spam email you get, and they say, if you don't want to receive this, penis enlargement email, just click here. And I always believe that if you actually click there, it's going to encourage them to send you more.
So you're suggesting by complaining that TSA may take a closer look at me or
right.
Whatever. Well, it's interesting. I mean, of course, that's not my character, not to ask questions. I'm a journalist, as you are, and you know how that goes. But it's been very interesting. In the column ran last Friday in the Chronicle, how many horror stories I've heard of not only individuals who have been put through this hell and much worse than I have over a long period of time, but in some cases their children, like their 5-year-old kid, when they themselves have not been on the watch list, but their 5-year-old kid is. Well, I don't think too many 5-year-olds on their own are going to be joining Al Qaeda without their parents' knowledge.
Yeah, I mean,
which is I guess it's a glib way of making the point, Peter, that one of the concerns I have here is we don't know how effective this is.
Mm-hmm.
Is this? It seems, from what I'm hearing from a lot of people who have these kinds of stories, that it's so haphazard, and we're getting, it's the old saying with computers, garbage in, garbage out. If we're stopping all the wrong people and too many of the people, is that making it easier for the people we really do want to stop to slide through?
We're talking with John Diaz. He's the editorial page editor at the San Francisco Chronicle, and he's found himself on the TSA watch list. Now, the watch list is different from the no-fly list, right?
Right. There are a couple different categories, the most strict of being the no-fly list. And if you're on that, which there's been a couple famous cases like Cat Stevens, for instance, ended up on the no-fly list. If you're on the no-fly list, you actually cannot board a plane in the United States. So that's obviously a different level, and certainly there has to be a threshold for being an imminent threat there. Although, again, there's been a lot of mistakes on who's been put on the no-fly list. And, in fact, I was talking with a representative at the TSA who said that they acknowledged that maybe the list was a little broader than it needed to be or had some mistakes in it. And they claim to have cleaned that up and cut it roughly in half in the past few months.
Now, they didn't say something aside like, we can only deal with what the NSA and the FBI give us?
No. this is what another thing that is so frustrating about this, Peter, is here we have this government list that can inconvenience you and restrict your, basic freedoms and activities, and they won't even say what the criteria are for these lists.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about, and they have no accountability. Congress cannot, find out what's going on. There's no independent watchdog. So all I can say is when you're giving government that type of power to intrude on people's lives with no accountability, kind of reminds me of the old expression, shouldn't we have a government of laws and not of men, that we shouldn't count on the benevolence of those in power at any given time, that they're not abusing these powers in some way?
Mm-hmm. Well, and this is reminiscent, too, of the one of the contested portions of the Patriot Act that required librarians to disclose to the government what books I have checked out, but did not permit them to tell me that they had told the government what books I have checked out. That's a real scary Big Brother slippery slope into fascism, in my view.
Yeah, and it definitely the rationalization, of course, TSA will give for not letting us even know what the criteria or even the aggregate number of how many people are on this list is. They say, well, we really can't let the bad guys know what we're looking for, how we're looking for it, because then the bad guys will know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you go down, talk about slippery slopes, Peter, if you go down that rationalization, that's dangerous territory. That we're basically saying, well, due process doesn't really matter. The result is what matters.
Well, and John Diaz, I don't want to overstate this or appear alarmist, but I'm very concerned about the terms in the so-called Military Commissions Act of 2006, because as it was enacted, it permits the president to designate anyone as an unlawful enemy combatant, including a U.S. citizen like you, and you can easily create a scenario where you move from the watch list to the no-fly list to Gitmo.
You're right. There's not that check and balance. And what's to even, in a very, sort of a low-grade abuse of this, Peter, if you or I are in that secret TSA room overseeing that list and there's no accountability or whatever, I mean, even something, is seemingly, low level as one of our neighbors irritates us, or, gee, there's somebody who we see on TV that we don't like or read in the newspaper. Let's just put them on and give them a little hell
mm-hmm.
next time they go to an airport. I mean, we need those kinds of checks and balances. At least tell us what the criteria are for those kinds of list.
And John, Senator Ted Kennedy is on the no-fly list, and he has tried to get off. And what you just described could be the way he got on that list, that somebody said, let's stick it to a liberal.
I mean, and Loretta Sanchez, a congresswoman from Southern California, ended up in a similar, I believe she was on the watch list. She was actually able to fly, but as I did, had to go through the additional security measures.
Mm-hmm.
There is really not, a safeguard. Now, for all of those who are listening to this program who say, oh, this is absurd, the Bush administration will never do this, all of you liberals are paranoid, all I can say is when you put in a set of rules, you have to apply it if the shoe is on the other foot. If Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton or John Edwards, name whoever becomes president who you disagree with, do you want to give them the same powers? That ought to be the standard.
Yeah. We're talking with John Diaz. As I mentioned, he's the editorial page editor of the San Francisco Chronicle. He's found himself on the TSA watch list. And if you have a comment, and in particular, if you have been singled out for special security scrutiny at an airport, either because of a watch list or for other reasons, we'd love to hear from you. And if you just want to comment on the use of this process to, quote-unquote, secure America, you're welcome to call us. Toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B. It's 888-573-8372. And this portion of the Peter B. Collins Show is brought to you by Naked Airlines.
I used to fly with my clothes on till the airline clothing banned. We went from scanning to banning. One airline had tanning, and this was the ad they ran. Fly safe. No weapons to find. You're safer with nothing on. Naked Airlines. No carry-ons, no clothing, no laptops. Well, laptops. And I'm feeling shy. Instead of metal detection, no clothing directions from the nude flight attendant, a guy. Damn. Fly safe, fly naked. No weapons to find. You're safer with nothing on. Naked Airlines.
It's time for a break. We'll continue in a moment. If you have a question or comment, call me now. Toll free, 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. It's the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, PattyRossCarmel.com.
Every night, Jack Thomas camps out on a cold, lonely street corner. Tonight, some people almost brought him something to eat. Someone almost drove him to a shelter. Another almost brought him a warm blanket. And Jack Thomas, well, he almost made it through the night. Sometimes instead of giving, we almost give. But that's the same as not giving at all. Don't almost give. Give. Visit don'talmostgive.org. A message from the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Stephanie Miller. You know how much I love the Monterey Peninsula. You've got it all. Mountains, the sea, some of the best box wine I've ever had. You also have a great radio station, KRXA, your progressive prescription. So join me, voice guy extraordinaire Jim Ward, and producer Chris Lavoie as we take back America every weekday morning, 6 to 9 a.m., right here on AM 540.
Hello, everybody. Let's take a look at the latest. And got a problem in, King City. Well, we had a problem in King City, so we're not going to tell you about that. But we do have an accident in Salinas. It's southbound 101 at Sanborn. It's two-vehicle fender bender. It is off to the right shoulder of the off-ramp area. And CHP is, in fact, on scene there. Also want to tell you about San Juan Batista, southbound 101, before 129, a box of lettuce, folks. A box of lettuce in the lanes there. Salinas, Harris Place and Harris Road. Two-vehicle crash blocking the roadway. Emergency crews are on scene. to tend to that situation. Their support brought to you by NBC 11 News at 5. Today at 5, how the bionic arm helps stroke patients retrain their mind and muscles. Day on NBC 11 at 5.
Okay. Have a system at our airports that tags the wrong people and subjects them to delays, interrogation, potential humiliation. John Diaz is our guest right now. He's the editorial page editor at the San Francisco Chronicle. As you heard, he recently discovered that he's on the watch list of the Transportation Security Administration. And John, my resentment is building because I feel that we have overdone the airport security thing to the point where it really does slow down commerce and inconvenience people with very little benefit. Pardon me. And I'm still chafing at the recent regulations that were imposed last August about carrying on liquids. And, you know, that Bojinka 2 plot that was busted up in London was barely underway, yet the U.S. played it as if they were going to, you know, be on 12 planes the following week. 25 people were arrested. Less than a dozen are still in custody. The alleged ringleader has been downgraded to some sort of a sap. And, you know, we are still on full alert, and they confiscated my Crystal Geyser water bottle the last time I tried to get on a plane.
Well, I would say this about that, you know, Peter, in terms of the liquids and all of the measures, taking off your shoes and everything in terms of airport security. Look, I want the planes to be as secure as anyone else. I mean, when we're up there, we're obviously vulnerable. 9/11 showed what could happen. But I guess what concerns me when you look overall at our efforts on terrorism is, in a way, that's fighting the last war.
Yeah, the Maginot Line is the comparison I make.
Exactly. And when you look at some of these other concerns, such as the inspections at the ports that are not being done, what we've seen with this pet food contamination, mm-hmm. the vulnerability of our food supply. I mean, there's an awful lot of wide open gaps right now that maybe ought to be getting more government attention. And again, I'm not being dismissive at all about the need to protect airplanes because, as we saw in 9/11, they mm-hmm. can be turned into a weapon against the United States.
But we also have been feared up to the point that we passively accept these things. We certainly can't talk about it at the airport, or we'll be tagged as some sort of an uncooperative potential terrorist. And we simply acquiesce to these measures without any real examination of how effective they are and what the true costs are.
Yeah, you mentioned a very important word there when you said effective, because not only do we not know who is on this list and why and whether it's justified, we have no idea whether this is doing anything in terms of stopping or even deterring would-be terrorists, because the federal government has exempted itself from any kind of scrutiny, including the Privacy Act of 1974 does not apply to this list. Otherwise, if the government keeps files on you that are not related to any kind of ongoing investigation, you can find out. But you can't in this case, and you can't go in and see, you know, on what basis. And as we talk about these erosion of civil liberties, which I think are very real and very much a concern after 9/11, because you do need to strike a balance, the question I keep coming back to is, at what point are we going to get back these liberties that we've given up?
Mm-hmm.
Because the war on terrorism, by definition, is an open-ended war. It's not going to be something that's going to be settled with a treaty on an aircraft carrier. It is or surrender ceremony on an aircraft carrier or on a tent in the middle of the desert.
Or at Versailles.
Exactly. this is something that is probably going to be with us to some degree or another for the rest of our lives and beyond. So all these liberties that we're giving up, I would ask, what politician is going to have the mettle to come in and say, hey, it's time, we've overreacted, it's time to roll back, because they're so risk-averse. The idea that they don't want to be blamed for if something did get wrong.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I try to be even-handed about Senator Feinstein. I'm pleased that she has introduced a bill to close Guantanamo Bay, but I am continually stunned that she wants to support Arlen Specter's efforts to paper over the whole NSA illegal eavesdropping program. And now the White House is backpedaling from the Gonzales promise in January that they would submit to the FISA court. And that, you know, was a sense of relief to some people. They're now saying, well, maybe not. And I'm not hearing any objections coming from the so-called liberal Democrats.
Yeah, they really threw out from the Patriot Act on, there's really been a lot of timidity on Capitol Hill to standing up to any of these things. And the NSA wiretapping is a really good example because the administration has been so effective, the Bush White House, at playing off fear on this. I mean, every time we commented on editorially, we'll get a number of letters from people who basically parrot the White House talking points of, well, gee, if you're talking on the phone with Al-Qaeda, you know, we want to be able to, listen in or find out, figure out why you're calling them. Well, clearly within the FISA laws, any of the contingencies that the White House has reasonably argued would require domestic surveillance are covered. And the threshold is so low, they don't need to even get, under the FISA laws, they don't even need to get advance notice. They can come in retroactively.
Right.
It's just that kind of judicial review that keeps these powers from being abused. And there's just an awful lot of examples that have been allowed to occur in this climate of fear. And I can't help but think that this fear is being promulgated partly for political reasons.
Well, I certainly agree, and I'd probably say that a little stronger. John, just about a minute remaining, and I just want to turn to one other thing. I really appreciate the work that you and your colleagues on the editorial page have done regarding the prison system in California and the serious problems that have festered for too long. And in particular, you have the most balanced view of the issues related to life prisoners. There are about 25,000 guys. Many have been in since the mid-1970s, and many of them were promised the possibility of parole, but it has been politically denied to them by successive governors. Schwarzenegger was good about it in the first year, and then as he approached re-election, he kind of looked to the prison guards for cues and stopped processing those in a fair way. But the Chronicle's been a very strong voice on behalf of those individuals. I just want to thank you for that.
Well, thank you. And that's an issue that we will continue to focus on, because there again, I think you have a problem of a lack of political spine, because nobody wants to be seen as soft on crime. But there are so many of these inmates that we've focused on, including most recently this Lozell Woodmore, who basically are serving far more than they should.
Right. John, I'm out of time. Thank you very much. John Diaz at the San Francisco Chronicle.
Today's edition of the Peter B. Collins Show was pre-recorded because his voice is all messed up.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. By a vote of 221 to 205, the House just passed another war funding bill President Bush promises to veto. Speaker Nancy Pelosi urged passage, which would the bill would provide money through July, but leave options open after that.
A war which has ended so many lives, weakened our military, at a great risk to our security, and cost so much money, cost so much in reputation for America throughout the world, cannot continue indefinitely.
I'm Mark Knoller at the White House, where President Bush again is trotting out his big gun in dealing with Congress, the veto. He will not sign a war appropriations bill that funds U.S. troops only 60 days at a time. He called it a haphazard and piecemeal approach. But he's willing to work with Democrats on setting benchmarks for progress in Iraq, but he did not commit to penalties if the benchmarks are not met.
The maker of the powerful painkiller OxyContin will pay more than $700 million to settle charges it stubbornly ignored problems with the drug.
More than 400 deaths have been blamed on the drug. Now its manufacturer, Purdue Pharma, admits it lied to doctors and patients about the risks to boost sales. The company and three top executives today pleaded guilty after a government investigation found that from 1996, when the drug hit the market, to 2001, Purdue Pharma falsely claimed that OxyContin was less addictive, less subject to abuse, and less likely to cause withdrawal symptoms than other pain medications. None of that was true.
CBS News correspondent Bob Orr. Firefighters in Florida and Georgia are struggling against the wind that's fanning the flames of wildfires. Help has arrived from all over the country. Steve Harris is an expert from Washington State.
The main tactic is to find a good control point, fire line that we can burn off. An existing line is typically what we try to use, existing roads and trails, and clean those up and then fire off of those to create a widened fire break for the fire, to hopefully corral the fire.
So far, nearly 300 square miles have burned. Missouri prison inmates have been pressed into sandbagging service as rivers and streams threaten more flooding.
I'm Peter King. With the Platte River rising, it took just over a day to build makeshift dikes.
Basically, we would build a six-foot berm across both the railroad and also the state highway.
You can't drive over the river, but BNSF Railroad General Manager Boyd Andrew says trains will run until the river gets too high. Says it won't take long to finish the dike over the tracks.
45 minutes. We've already did a test run, so we already know how long it'll take us. We're ready to go at a moment's notice.
With the river top just inches away from the bridge bottoms, he says he hopes he won't have to see how well the dike works. Peter King, CBS News, Platte County, Missouri.
The Dow pulled back today, down 147 points to close at 13,215. The NASDAQ down 42 points. This is CBS News.
In the search for ways to improve healthcare, we'd like to add another solution. I-beams. That's right, I-beams. A member of the American Institute of Architects can use I-beams to create spaces that enhance healing by easing a patient's mind, sharpening a surgeon's skill, softening a nurse's touch. Not bad for a hunk of iron. Get an AIA architect involved early. You'll feel much better. AIA. Good design makes a difference. Visit AIA.org.
If you could change the world, what would you do? How would you use your power? What human needs would you remedy? And while you may wonder about your ability to change the world, you certainly can change your world. The people of Sitco demonstrate this every day. For example, we've contributed over $82 million to the Muscular Dystrophy Association. And we give in other ways to our local communities all across this country, which actually does change the world. Sitco, there at every turn.
You say you're watching your diet and staying slim? Don't be so smug.
Just because someone is thin doesn't mean they're invincible.
In fact, just because you're thin on the outside doesn't mean you're not fat inside. Researchers now think internal fat could be just as bad for you, fat that surrounds vital organs like the heart or liver. And they think people who lose weight by simply cutting back on calories but avoiding the gym may be fooling themselves. Cardiologist Louis Tischholz of Hackensack University Medical Center.
Diet and exercise are important to everybody, whether you're thin or fat.
Cammy McCormick, CBS News.
With two wars on its plate, the Pentagon doesn't need problems with employees who cheat on their taxes, but officials have had to issue a memo telling personnel they should be a model to the country. Statistics show the Pentagon's civilian workforce has the worst record of tax compliance of any federal agency. Nearly 5% of the Defense Department's employees owe money or haven't filed returns. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
Our next life exercise, fixing copier paper jam.
4321. Grab copier part mark number 6. And pull. And pull. Grab deeply jammed paper. Lift and tug. Press reset button quickly. And press. And press. Now kick and press and kick and press and kick. And press.
Life is exercise. Snickers Marathon is energy. Great tasting, nutritious, long-lasting energy for the demands of your day. Grab a Snickers Marathon in the energy bar aisle.
If your car or truck is ready for new tires before your wallet is, hurry to your Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealership.
I can help. Take a tip for me.
Buy tires now and pay later with our genuine service credit card. Plus, bring in any competitor's current price ad on the name brand tires we sell within 30 days of purchase, and we'll beat that price, guaranteed. New tires, installed by 4 trained experts. Buy now and pay later. See your Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealership for details today. Offer ends June 30th.
Today's program is pre-recorded.
Live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course. It's the unpredictable Peter B. Collins Show, originating from that dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Call in anytime toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and add your voice to Peter B.'s America.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. Heat wave in Northern California. Holy. Coming up next hour, we're going to meet a 23-year-old veteran of the Iraq War, Mike Ergo. He went to Iraq gung-ho. In March of this year, he joined protesters on the streets of San Francisco. We'll talk about his transition. And also, we're going to get a report from the chair of the IPCC, the Intergovernment Panel on Climate Change. That's the UN-organized group. And we're going to dial up India, where it's going to be the crack of dawn for Dr. R.K. Pachauri. And he'll be joining us in the free speech zone next hour, too, to tell us that it may not be too late to tackle the problems related to our contributions to global warming. That's all ahead here on the Peter B. Collins Show. As usual, your calls and comments are welcome. Lines are open if you'd like to talk with us this hour as Jeffrey Feldman joins us live in the secret studio. And the toll-free number is 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. Jeffrey, of course, has been on our program many times. I first discovered him listening to the Tom Hartman program, and he's based in New York City, studies language and framing, rhetoric, and he's published a new book called Framing the Debate, Famous Presidential Speeches and How Progressives Can Use Them to Change the Conversation and Win Elections. Hello, Jeffrey.
Hi, Peter.
How you doing today?
I'm great.
Nice to meet you in the flesh.
Hey, it's great to be here.
And you thought I had a full head of hair and all that, right? And I was about, you know, real skinny.
I had in my mind a long flowing hair. But I'm not disillusioned.
Well, it was there about 25 years ago. And then it started to fall out. Well, Jeffrey, it's a real pleasure to meet you. And I just want to thank you in person for the work that you do and the intelligent analysis that you bring us to some of what passes for political rhetoric in the modern age. You're on a book tour, and why don't you tick off a couple of the places you're going to be over the next few days. And then I want to talk about a specific issue that I'm struggling with. Then I want to talk about some of the recent candidate appearances on television. We'll mix it up a little bit, and we'll take some phone calls, too, if people want to join in the conversation. What are some of your stops on the West Coast leg of your book tour?
Well, tonight we'll be at Drinking Liberally in San Francisco, which is at a bar called Zeitgeist at 199 Valencia, and everybody should stop by there. That starts at 6 o'clock, and there should probably be a big turnout. And then the day after tomorrow, on Wednesday, I'll be at Cody's, a bookstore in Berkeley, appearing with George Lakoff. And if you show up, Book TV will be there from C-SPAN as well, so if you ask a question, you'll be on TV.
Nice, nice. And you did have an appearance scheduled in Pacific Grove, and for our Central Coast listeners, that had to be rescheduled because of a fire?
Apparently there was some type of incident in the building at the Stoats. The Friends of the Stoats Museum were hosting me, and I'm still waiting to find out about that.
Mm-hmm.
So if you did have a reservation there, you should probably check with the organizer and find out what's going to happen.
Great. I told this a little bit last hour as I started the program. Over the weekend, I was in Palm Springs. It was a neat little tennis tournament for people who play on grass courts with wooden rackets, and it's called the Woody. And one of the champions in the finals yesterday is named Granville, and his father, Granville, who I think is Granville III, was in the audience. And Granville and his wife, Virginia, found out that I do radio talk shows, and they seemed excited. And then they found out that I'm a liberal, and that gave them great consternation. And we got into a very interesting conversation, and, you know, we weren't trying to solve the problems of the world, and neither one of us was trying to win a debate. But what became very clear is that we are in parallel universes. They are heavy users of Fox News Channel. One of the things we discussed is how much name-calling Bill O'Reilly does. That is the subject of a report that came out of Indiana University. And Bill O'Reilly attacked that report on his show and claimed that it had been funded by George Soros. That's not true. But my new friend Granville was very convinced of that because he heard it from a source that he considers highly credible. And he dismissed the general allegation there that's based on this study, which is that Bill O'Reilly does name-calling at the rate of 6.8 times per minute, which is breathtaking. It really is. I mean, even if I did OxyContin, I don't know if I could achieve that. And so I bring this up because I'm really interested, Jeffrey, in reaching out beyond the choir of listeners who I love and who listen to this program and seem to have some regard for me and the viewpoints that we bring. But I'm more interested in persuading people like Granville in trying to open their minds and get them to see that, in particular, Fox News is a dangerous source to rely on. So I want your advice here. Let me get on the couch and tell me how I should approach people like this who have such different sets of information.
Yeah, it's a really tricky question because, you know, one of the core concepts when we're talking about framing the debate is this notion of repetition. That really the strongest scientific theory behind the idea of framing is the notion that if words or concepts are repeated often enough, that actually changes the brain physically, such that people's conceptions about what politics is about, the right or wrong side of an issue, becomes literally physically ingrained in their brain. And so when you are talking about someone who listens to Fox News every day, who's conditioned by people like O'Reilly or like Limbaugh, we're not just talking about someone who is listening to a particular political issue, but someone who's actually been conditioned in order to understand things in a certain way. If we apply that to a concept like the word liberal, for example, you know, for the past 15 years we've had ingrained in the minds of people who listen to conservative media outlets the idea that liberals are dangerous, that they want to undermine America, that they're really seeking to do the types of things that we associate with people who commit treason. So the first step really in engaging people who are on the opposite side, who are really at the receiving end of that conservative noise machine, is somehow getting them to step away from Fox News, getting them to step away from people like O'Reilly, people like Limbaugh. So it's a very, very difficult bill to fill. But in terms of getting people to really pay attention, you know, the key, I think, is steering them into areas that are not quite as hotly contested. For example, if we're talking about the Iraq War, which I think is, you know, the big issue that's on everyone's mind, you know, a lot of times people want to talk about immediately cut to the idea of troop withdrawal or cut to the idea of Bush being a failure or Cheney being dangerous. And I confess, I write about these things myself. But if you want to get people to listen who may not necessarily agree with our perspective, I often go back to a speech by Dwight Eisenhower, who was a Republican, go back to his final speech in which he talked about the great danger in American foreign policy not being failed military occupations, but being this concept of imbalance, which is really a concept that I find Republicans and liberals listen to alike, the notion being that we, in order to make progress, in order to make peace, we need to have a balanced foreign policy. Now, what Eisenhower meant by this balanced foreign policy was that we could not have a policy driven entirely by one faction in our society. What he was warning against was a foreign policy driven by the military-industrial complex, this idea that foreign interventions that were driven by the profit motive, which would put certain people in government, would answer only to the voice of corporations. So in talking with conservatives in my own world, in my family, we all have them, the conservative uncle, the conservative grandfather, or, you know, the young lawyer who's a conservative in the family, I often steer the conversation to this notion of balance and then take it from there.
Gosh, I've got one of each. You mentioned the nephew. My nephew David in San Diego has taken a hard right turn 13, 14 years ago. He worked as a producer for me on my liberal radio show, and I know I made him squirm a little bit, but he's now one of them. And we do have some interesting conversations over the holiday tables. We're talking with Jeffrey Feldman here on the Peter B. Collins Show, and I want to open up the phone lines for you and ask about your issues similar to mine. How do you deal with smart people, people who are quite likable and who you don't think are nuts or you know, deranged or anything like that, but they are captive to these sources of information that push them into a very right, hard right point of view? And I'm very interested in your ideas. If you have an uncle or a grandpa or somebody like that who you've been able to persuade with a little humor, or maybe you sit them down and watch Jon Stewart together on The Daily Show at Comedy Central, if you have any techniques for reaching out, opening minds, and persuading people on the other side of this great divide, I invite you to call and talk with me and Jeffrey Feldman this hour. Lines are open for you, toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B. It's 888-573-8372. And you can try the email, peter@peterbcollins.com. There's a big backlog there, but I will catch up with it sooner or later. And, Jeffrey, just about a minute before our break coming up here, have you had any breakthroughs of your own with those relatives who are much more conservative than you?
Well, I have. And in terms of with the conservative members of my family, I find that moving things to what I call a management frame has been relatively successful in the past few years. When I'm talking about a management frame, it's a way of framing the Republican administration in terms of their competence and their incompetence. So talking about the inability of the Bush administration to manage a budget, their inability to plan more than a few feet out in front of their own nose, I find that this has been very successful, particularly with Republicans whose identity has been forged out of their success in business. They see their politics as a product of their organization and success. So pointing out how inconsistent that is with the Bush administration has been, in my experience, quite successful.
Like Katrina. We'll take a break and return with Jeffrey Feldman. Lines open for you. Toll free, 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. You're in tune with the Peter B. Collins Show.
This week on Rock Roller Real Estate, meet Jim Ross, president of National Real Estate Holdings, as he shares his thoughts and ideas on investing in real estate. Get ready for our big event with Jim and National Real Estate Holdings and IPX 1031 to learn about how to use a 1031 exchange to invest in real estate properties. It's coming up on Tuesday, May 22nd at the Santa Clara Marriott starting at 6 p.m. For more information about the show, call 408-892-3376. Rock Roller Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school, when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
Pacific Grove Liquors is the one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wine, spirits, and beers at very reasonable prices. Whether you seek the ideal California or imported wine, quality distilled spirits like top shelf tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and premium vodkas, PG Liquors is your beverage outlet. Love beer? PG Liquors boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales and lagers, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand your wine, beer, and liquor store.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Well, hopefully we'll give you some traffic that you like a lot. And let's start off in San Juan Bautista, southbound 101 before 129. Box of lettuce still being reported in the lanes. I don't hear about that much in that area, do you? Salinas, North Main, in both directions between 101 and Rossi. The right lane is closed due to an electrical work from 6 a.m. to 4 p.m. So that's still, that has actually ceased, but everything looking pretty good there. Also want to mention a problem in Santa Clara County, 152 eastbound before Fifield. Four-vehicle crash partially blocking the roadway there. And in Salinas, Harris Place at Harris Road, a two-car injury crash is reported, and emergency crews remain on scene there. Their support brought to you by your Ford Lincoln Mercury Certified Pre-Owned Dealer. Get 3.9 APR on a certified pre-owned Ford or Lincoln. Offer ends 6/30/07.
Now watch my deft fingertips here as we avoid a $350,000 fine from the Federal Communications Commission. This is Mick Jagger and the Stones. Wonder what rhymes with that. We got to wait a couple of seconds here, and now we'll rejoin the tune. How come you're so wrong, my sweet neocon? I guess that's not going to work with Granville, you think, Jeffrey Feldman?
I don't think that's going to work. Not even close.
Well, listen, Thursday night they had the joint appearance, the Love Fest, and I refuse to call these things a debate unless there actually is interaction and people are allowed to argue the issues. It was a joint appearance, a sequential question and answer period, for the 11 current contenders for the Republican presidential nomination next year. So give me a couple of quick thoughts on the overview, and then maybe you can pick two or three of the pretender contenders who you think has some traction.
Yeah, what I call the GOP puppet show held at the Reagan Library. And, you know, in terms of the overall framing, I still think that, you know, anybody who watched this event and thinks that it's going to be a cakewalk for the Democrats in the presidential election is sorely mistaken. This was a meticulously framed event right from the start. The whole concept was the legacy of Ronald Reagan. They even had film footage of all the candidates walking through the presidential library. There were literally dozens and dozens of references to Ronald Reagan, and the very first questions was a toss of the hat to Ronald Reagan. So you had all these candidates who come from very different perspectives, from people who are kind of rabidly anti-immigration to those kind of murky positioned, you know, centrist Republicans, who are all asked to position themselves relative to Ronald Reagan. And of course, you know, the great big elephant in the room, or the elephant who wasn't in the room, was the current president, who had, you know, done his best to put the Republican Party at the bottom of the ocean to crash and burn. So the idea of giving the current set of candidates a set of roots and what they kept on calling the legacy of Ronald Reagan was everywhere. And I thought it was very, very successful. The event really had a sense of emotion, a sense of common spirit, and any division that there was between the candidates was lessened as a result of it. It was a great event to watch.
And, of course, the Republican base buys the Reagan mythology lock, stock, and barrel. And MSNBC did nothing to puncture that.
No, I mean, in fact, one would think that, Chris Matthews had was getting some type of a royalty for every time he mentioned the name Ronald Reagan. They were literally gushing over this legacy of Reagan.
Did he mention that his boss, Tip O'Neill, used to talk about how they could get together and have a drink in the evening after fighting over politics all day? I've heard that story almost as many times as his declarations of love for Rudy Giuliani.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it really is incredible. But, you know, you put that on top of what is really, you know, this is not something that comes out of the blue for the Republican Party. For a long time, they have been building this big frame for what politics is all about in this country. And they've been doing it through the name and the image of Ronald Reagan, not just changing about, you know, as many airports and town squares to be called Ronald Reagan as possible, but by constructing this story of a man who, for many of us, you know, just never existed, this kind of Papa Bear American president, friendly to everyone and good for the entire nation, as opposed to a man who really drove the debt up, who was cruel and heartless in many ways to the poor, racist, homophobic, and had an incredibly dangerous foreign policy. So,
well, and I think you summed that up very well. We should hear about that occasionally in the corporate media, but it's all been lost. We just hear the hagiography repeated endlessly. So who surfaced for you in this joint appearance as somebody who's got some traction?
Well, I think there were two, really. The first was Giuliani. Giuliani had a rehearsed first answer to how he would embody the Reagan style of leadership, and he used this word optimism. He repeated that about a half a dozen times in his answer, and he said that really to be a Reagan Republican meant to solve problems with optimism, and that was a segue for Giuliani into talking about how he, in his own active imagination, single-handedly brought back New York City after the attacks of September 11th, which, of course, is not true. I mean, really, Rudy Giuliani caused an incredible number of problems, not to mention insisting that businesses be reestablished around ground zero in an environment that was toxic for people to breathe. But his answer was very fluid, and it was very persuasive. So the first one is, you know, Giuliani tying himself to Reagan and the notion of optimism. The other, I think, was Mitt Romney. You know, Mitt Romney, I think, as a piece of Republican eye candy, there's been a lot of talk about how much money he's raised. But Romney really was able to break out of the pack in how much he could think on his feet. In particular, there was a question about stem cell research in which Romney talked both about the importance of finding cures because he has a sick wife, which was in response to a question from Nancy Reagan, who is in favor of stem cell research, but at the same time pushing non-embryo stem cell research. So Romney really did a great job at finessing complicated issues.
So he split the baby.
He split the baby.
Or the embryo.
Exactly.
All right, we got to run to a break here. We'll continue after the break with Jeffrey Feldman. His new book is out, Framing the Debate, Famous Presidential Speeches and How Progressives Can Use Them to Change the Conversation and Win Elections. And we'll take your phone calls in the next segment, but you got to get on the line first. Call us toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372 puts you through to the Peter B. Collins Show. Produced in San Francisco by Katrina Rill. Visit our website, peterbcollins.com, where you can catch the live stream and our archive programs, too.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
In response to rising interest rates, Victor Munoz of Creative Mortgage in Salinas offers the following advice to homeowners with variable rate loans. Don't panic or overreact. If you feel trapped in a frightening squeeze, first analyze your situation calmly, then take the best action available. There are so many types of loans, one is very likely to meet your particular needs. For a free consultation with Victor Munoz at Creative Mortgage, call 757-0436. Let Victor share with you the knowledge that he has built up over many years in the mortgage industry. Call Victor at 757-0436 today.
Dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly, Thinker Toys, with two beautiful stores on the Monterey Peninsula, has an incredible selection of fun and educational toys, games, books, and art supplies for infants to teens. For nearly 40 years, Thinker Toys owner Mark Phillips and his experienced staff have been serving the parents and children of the Central Coast. They can help you choose the perfect gift for the special child in your life. Join Thinker Toys' three generations of satisfied customers, and you'll see why Thinker Toys is the most fun place to shop on the Monterey Peninsula. Open every day. Thinker Toys is at the corner of San Carlos and 7th in Carmel by the Sea, and next to Starbucks in the Del Monte Center in Monterey. You can also order by phone, 831-624-0441. That's 624-0441. Or browse at thinkertoys.com.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Ron Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service, full service.
Okay, you want a website? What next? A lot of people can do the job, but you want innovation at a reasonable price. You want Dale Edward. Dale builds amazing websites with streaming video. Being a pro photographer ensures high quality content. Websites, wedding, and special events photography, all at a reasonable price. Go to DaleEdward.com or call 277-9847. That's 277-9847.
Hi, Ed Schultz here. Starting May 14th, The Ed Schultz Show moves to 9 a.m. to noon right here on KRXA 540. So join us for the best in talk radio, news, commentary, and your calls. If it's happening in America, it'll be on The Ed Schultz Show, 9 a.m. to noon, starting May 14th, right here on AM 540 KRXA.
Seize the day and save money. That's the slogan of Stardate Solar, a company providing you with the highest quality solar power for your Monterey Bay Area home or business at the guaranteed lowest price. And that's the idea behind the Stardate Solar Power Hour. I'm your host, Dale Julin. Every Saturday at high noon, our nationally known cast of energy experts will tell you the latest news about the coming solar economy. And you'll also hear about the politics of solar power as well. The Stardate Solar Power Hour, Saturdays at noon and at StardateSolar.com.
Welcome to Peter B's America.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show on a sweltering Monday on the left coast. It's 33 minutes after the hour. Jeffrey Feldman found his way to our secret studio. He's live with me today. And we're taking your phone calls, only there's nobody on the line. 888-5-PETER-B, toll free, 888-573-8372. Now, I am proposing that this is the theme song for Clinton 08. They really wore out that Fleetwood Mac song about Don't Stop Thinking About Tomorrow. But isn't Hillary's whole plan just to squat out there in the middle of the road and force the other Democratic candidates to take positions either to her left or right? But she's kind of a road hog.
Yeah, it does seem that Hillary Clinton's strategy is to, you know, do what she would say in her own mind, I think, is triangulate with positions that are on the right, which would put her in this kind of this notion of neither being too liberal or too conservative, but being right there in the middle of the road. And from time to time, I think, whenever there is a position on the left of her that seems exciting to people, just appropriating it and claiming it as her own. I think that will be her strategy for quite some time. You know, we saw that this week during the past few appearances of all the candidates together. You had Bill Richardson propose something which was actually quite a creative and interesting idea, which was to put a bill through the Congress which would deauthorize the war, effectively setting in motion a constitutional question that would then have to be resolved by the Supreme Court. And in the past couple of days, Hillary Clinton put this forward as her own proposal. And I think what you see there is not Hillary Clinton being momentarily extremely liberal, but just making sure that there are no positions that are more exciting than what she's offering on either side.
Just a quick note on the paternity of that idea. Back in January, we had a conversation with Congressman Sam Farr, the Democrat who represents Monterey and Santa Cruz. And we had that day spoken to an attorney, a law professor at Ohio State University, about war powers and about the authorization to use military force. And Congressman Farr came on after that, and I raised the question. I said, what about war powers? And, you know, is there some way we can rein in the president? And the next day, he introduced a bill, a very simple two-clause bill, one that would declare the authorization to use military force repealed, and the other to instruct the president to bring the troops home as expeditiously as possible. And I think it's a very interesting idea, and I just want to give Sam Farr and little old me a little credit, because I think that it is a way to put the president on the defensive without appearing to fail to support the troops.
Yeah, I think it's a great strategy, and you know, another way to think about it is it's a second line of pressure against the president. You know, for a long time now, the main frame that the Democrats have been pushing has been one of funding, the idea of putting forward a supplemental bill that would limit the engagement in Iraq, put timelines on, and force a change in direction. But this second line of pressure, which deauthorizes and really talks about the legality of the entire war, I think it, you know, as many lines as we can open up is critical. So, you know, kudos
but
all around.
I would offer this, and it's something that we should hear Hillary, Bill Richardson, and Sam Farr all saying, that it was John Warner, the senator from Virginia, the former chair of Armed Services in the Senate, who first raised the issue about whether the original authorization had any relation to the occupation and the civil war that we are supervising at this time. And that's the person who should be cited when they want to talk about the legality of the occupation and whether this supplemental, in essence, extends the legality of the original authorization.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you know, reclaiming as many of those voices as we can is crucial, particularly such noteworthy Republicans who have been outspoken, if not supporters, then at least defenders of the president's policy, and tying it back to them. And their questions about the legality are crucial. And let's not forget it. These aren't abstract questions of legality. They go back to the original wording of the bill, which cited the presence of weapons of mass destruction and an imminent threat from Saddam Hussein as the reason for declaring war. And so the proposals that have come onto the floor of Congress are about those original bills and bringing them back into the public discussion, and literally saying, look, you know, we found that these conditions were not there. Therefore, this original authorization has no legal basis.
Mm-hmm. Jeffrey Feldman is with us. He's got a new book out called Framing the Debate. And Jeffrey, take a moment here to tell us some of the speeches that you cite in the book, famous presidential speeches over really some generations, and which you think Democratic candidates could effectively cite or model on for the debate and rhetoric required for the 2008 cycle.
Well, the book has 15 speeches that run, you know, all the way from George Washington's inaugural speech clear up to a State of the Union by George W. Bush. And the idea really in bringing them together is not just to cite great speeches by Democratic presidents, but to go back in and find progressive ideas in the full run of American history with the broader strategy of giving progressive communications roots in the tradition of American speaking. Now, in terms of the speeches that I love and that I think are really germane to the present moment, I would cite really two. The first would be FDR's inaugural speech from 1933, in which he, you know, famously used the phrase, "We have nothing to fear but fear itself." But I think that the real power in that speech is not what most people believe it to be. A lot of people think that when he's talking about fear, he's talking about a fear of the Nazis and what was happening in World War II. In fact, that fear he's referencing is a fear in the investment bankers that held the economy in a death grip for many, many years. And it was through this idea of moving past our fear to a new conception of the economy that FDR was trying to reinvent the very notion of what American culture or society was about, this notion of a society based on achievement and looking forward. And I think, you know, the notion of a New Deal, for example, a New Deal for health care, these are ideas that can be lifted out of FDR and applied to contemporary problems, I think is a great speech, particularly for presidential candidates to use. The other one is...
Let me just jump in. I agree with you, and I think that the fear issue should be raised because it is one of the most potent weapons that the Republicans have, and Giuliani is trying to pick up that cudgel from Bush and fear us up. Fear up is an actual military term for trying to scare the heck out of people.
On many different levels, fear of terrorism, fear of going bankrupt, fear of not having health insurance, fear of your neighbors. I mean, there's all kinds of a fear the Republicans are trying to wield. And, you know, if you listen to some of the candidates out there, someone like Barack Obama, for example, who has tried for a long time to put out this idea of hope, I think that there is an awareness that a strong Democratic presidential campaign will frame all issues in terms of a broad positive concept, but I don't think that there's been a real effort yet to give it roots in something akin to FDR.
Mm-hmm. And you had another point about the second speech.
Well, I love Lyndon Johnson's speech that he gave at the University of Michigan, the Great Society speech, in which, you know, he talked about what effectively were dozens and dozens of very technical bills that he was going to put through the Congress, but he framed them in terms of this incredibly powerful idea. You know, he talked about building a great society, this approach to talking about progressive and liberal ideas, which doesn't dwell too much on the details of the blueprints, but actually gives us an impression of what the entire end product would look like when it was constructed. And for LBJ, that was a society that cared for its cities, that cared for its environment, and cared for educating its children. And it really was a real powerful model for how you could talk about real programmatic change in progressive terms without getting bogged down in the details. And I think that all the candidates out there right now could really benefit from that message. Talk about the building that you're putting out there. Don't get bogged down in the blueprints, and you'll bring people along. And then when it gets down to brass tacks, we can sit down around a table and work on the details together.
I'm interested in the dynamic, and these are somewhat polar opposites. The Democrats use hope. The Republicans use optimism. And I have to think that Frank Luntz did some focus groups where optimism just trumped everything, because Bush is quite incredible in the true meaning of that word. He is not credible because he will operate as if he's in deep denial about the obvious problems that he is responsible for, he and his cronies, but primarily him, and then offer up this sunny optimism, I guess, gleaned from the Reagan era, that, hey, don't worry, be happy. I've screwed everything up, but you don't need to worry because I'm optimistic.
Yeah, I mean, I think that a lot of the Republican notions of optimism have to do with the belief that no matter what happens in the federal government, we can all, as individuals, succeed in what they want our larger goal to be, which is, you know, accumulating individual wealth. I think that there's a long-term goal in the Republican Party to paint government, in this kind of single notion, a vague notion, that government is the great demon, the great danger to our selfish desires to grow wealthy and more independent. So when they talk about optimism, it's a buzzword for that. On the other hand, when we talk about hope on the left, I think that what people are trying to invoke the notion that we're all going to be okay because we're all standing together, that we're working together. Hope is a term that invokes notions of community, invokes ideas of confronting and solving problems in standing around a table or together in a room. It's not a selfish idea, but it's more of a collective idea. And there will be a struggle in the presidential election to define that. And I think that the candidate who wins, either on the left or on the right, will be the candidate that's able to ground that in the longest stretch of what it means to be American. You know, if a Democrat reaches back to notions that go beyond the current fights between the Republicans in the White House and the Republicans in Congress, and I think they'll be successful. And I think that that's a lesson that the Republicans have already taught themselves. That's why they're reaching to Reagan instead of just, you know, floating that idea of opportunity and optimism out there. They're trying to ground it in some type of historical footing. So, you know, if I had some advice to the Democrats right now, it would be to find that footing, you know, either in some of the speeches that I put out there or in another place in order to get people thinking in broader terms.
The book we're talking about is called Framing the Debate, and its author, Jeffrey Feldman, is our guest. It's out right now from IG Publishing, and Jeffrey's making some appearances. We'll recap them for you before the end of the hour. Chris is on the line from Salinas. Thanks for your call, Chris. You're on the Peter B. Collins Show with Jeffrey Feldman.
Yes, how are you doing?
Good.
I had a question. Why is it that, or why do you think that the Democratic leadership will not listen to the linguists out there, and they keep following the Republican frame? I mean, when they talk about not funding the troops, that's a Republican frame. When we all know, I mean, at least I would assume the Democrats know that this is an occupation in Iraq. It's not a war. And if we're not going to fund the occupation, it has nothing to do with not funding the troops. There's money in the pipeline, we can bring the troops home. They never want to follow on that frame.
Well, Chris, thanks for raising this, and let me just amplify a little bit, Jeffrey. You and I have touched on this in many different conversations that we've had. But I still see Senator Jack Reed of Rhode Island, who is often put out on the media as the point person on the war for the Democrats. He uses phrases like precipitous withdrawal. He talks about the war in Republican terms. He, along with Carl Levin and others, have surprised me by repeatedly saying, we will never cut off money for the troops, which is just such a serious mistake. And Chris, thank you for raising that. Jeffrey?
Yeah, I mean, thanks for the questions, Chris. There's two of them there. And the first, you know, why don't they listen to the linguists that are out there? I would say linguists and anthropologists, being an anthropologist myself. I think that initially when Lakoff's book, Moral Politics, was published a few years back, you know, in 2003, and then the shorter version, Don't Think of an Elephant, there was a lot of excitement for the big narrative. You know, what you saw in that book was an explanation for how it is that conservatives and liberals or progressives think differently. And there was a lot of excitement for that big story. But when it came down to actually doing the work of crafting messages, of thinking of ways to be more persuasive and more precise in our ideas, there was a lot of hedging because there's quite a number of consultants that are in place who saw framing as a threat to what they were doing, when in fact it's not a threat, it's just an addition, a way of making things more effective. So there's some institutional blockages that are there which will go away in time if we keep pushing and we keep investing in that direction. As for, you know, why do they keep following the language that's out there? Well, you know, I think that the bigger issue, even beyond talking about the war in terms of funding, I think that Bush keeps on defining the time frame for the war. Bush keeps on telling us that the war has a certain period of duration out there, and that, I think, opens him up to saying, and therefore, we need to have the funds in place in order to carry the plan out.
We're going to take a break and return with Jeffrey Feldman. There's room for more phone calls. Toll free, 888-5 Peter B. 888-573-8372. Also, visit Jeffrey's website, frameshopisopen.com. More in a moment on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Make this Mother's Day special. Treat mom to a delicious slice of Mexico at La Flor de Oaxaca, Carmel's only Mexican restaurant. Delight your senses and your palate in particular. Discover La Flor de Oaxaca this Mother's Day and meet chef owner Conrado Geronimo. La Flor de Oaxaca is located at the southwest corner of Dolores at 5th in Carmel by the Sea and is normally open Monday through Saturday for lunch and dinner from 11 to 9. And this Sunday, May 13th, Mother's Day, they'll be open from 4:30 to 9. Mom will
love Enchiladas San Felipe's or Enchiladas Verdes with a wine from the house list. La Flor de Oaxaca's mission is to serve you the best Mexican cuisine with an emphasis on the unique and delicious flavors of Oaxaca. La Flor de Oaxaca will be open this Sunday, Mother's Day. Make Mom's Day extra special with delicious Mexican food and live marimba music at La Flor de Oaxaca from 4:30 to 9. Don't miss the fun and delicious food.
I'm Scott Dick, the host of the Tasty Planet Show. Every Saturday from 1 to 4 p.m., I interview great guests, including national, regional, and local personalities that make our planet so delicious. And I want your feedback. It's simple. Go to www.tastyplanet.org, complete the survey, fill out a form, and you'll be automatically entered to win. That's all there is to it, and your info is safe with me. I won't use it for anything but this contest. So listen in on Saturdays from 1 to 4 p.m., and as Julia Child used to say, bon appétit!
There's more than one side to every issue. Actually, there's usually more than two sides. It's important to get a different perspective on issues and current events, and that's what we'll provide you on Thursday nights at 10 on KRXA 540. Our show is called, appropriately enough, A Different Perspective. I'm Jack Quirk, and I'm your host. I have guests with a unique angle on current issues. I'm often joined by Phil Rapp and other guest co-hosts who bring their own expertise to our discussions. Join us each Thursday night at 10 for A Different Perspective here on KRXA 540.
Hey everybody, let's take a look at our last traffic report of the evening, and we're going to start off with a problem in Salinas. Harris Place and Harris Road, injury crash still being reported. Two vehicles blocking the roadway. Emergency crews on scene, although it appears that is in the clearing stages. Santa Cruz Mountain, southbound 17, just after the summit. We have an accident on the right shoulder. Two cars involved in this one as well. Let's take a look at Santa... Let's try to get it out of my mouth. What am I trying to say here? Let's go to Santa Cruz, northbound 1 at Avalon. The off-ramp there, 24 hours a day, road work scheduled. That'll continue through the 31st of December. Some days, folks, you just have those kind of days. All right, no other major stalls or accidents to report in Salinas, Monterey as well. And the support is brought to you by PG&E. Right now, get up to a $75 rebate for a new high-efficiency clothes washer. It's one of the many rebates in the PG&E Smart Home Rebate Booklet.
...to change the conversation and win elections. It's out right now, and you can pick it up at your favorite independent bookstore or online. You were just up in Portland at Powell's, and they have a great website at powells.com. And why don't you recap again? You're going to be going into San Francisco this evening for Drinking Liberally.
That's right. I'll be at Zeitgeist, which is at 199 Valencia, for their local chapter of Drinking Liberally. And then on Wednesday, I will be at Cody's in Berkeley appearing with George Lakoff. I'll be doing conversation, some questions and answers, and we'll have C-SPAN Book TV there in the room. So it should be an exciting event there.
Great. I want to pick up on something that you posted at frameshopisopen.com following the Democratic group question and answer period. And that is that John Edwards was one of the few people who wanted to, somewhat in concert with what Chris was talking about, use his own language and also reject the language of the Bush administration. And so he explicitly described the so-called global war on terror as an erroneous label. Now, is this courageous and brilliant, or is this as deadly as Walter Mondale promising to raise taxes in 1984?
I think that I would say it's a little bit of both in terms of the Edwards moment, because what happens was it was a surprise question to the candidates where they were asked to raise their hands, I believe, if they believe or they still support the idea that there's a global war on terror. And, you know, it predictably you had Dennis Kucinich who didn't raise his hand, and Mike Gravel, who didn't raise his hand. And then the one other candidate, the top-tier candidate who didn't, was Edwards. But I'm not so sure that it was a premeditated decision on Edwards' part. And so the next couple days, he gave a speech in Portland in which he used very explicitly the phrase a political frame. He said that the global war on terror was a political frame that was strategically deployed to make us afraid to be critical of the Bush policy in Iraq and just about everything else. And, you know, one of the problems with simply pointing out that you have a frame that's in operation is that people are instantly going to ask you what the alternative is. Well, what is the alternative if the global war on terror is just an illusion, if it's just political a political tool that's out there? How should we be understanding international security, how should we be operating with our military, who are our enemies, and so forth. And I think that where Edwards stopped short was providing a strong alternative. Instead of putting out a big idea, Edwards used, I think, smaller concepts. He talked about the need to act quickly, which was his predominant frame leading up to that point. And he talked about the need for our security to be smart and for it to be intelligent, but he didn't really define how he viewed the threat to America as different from the way the Bush administration did. So calling out a frame, important, but there needs to be an alternative there.
Now, I'm not a candidate, and neither am I advising any of the candidates, but let me try something out here and get your reaction. If a Democratic candidate were to say, somewhat along the lines of what Kerry attempted in 2004, first of all, that we have seen that military action on a massive scale did not make us safer. It didn't help us capture Osama bin Laden or dismantle al-Qaeda. And therefore, we need to rethink this. And this is really much more of a long-term law enforcement problem than it is something for our military to work on. And we have plenty of evidence, you know, the failure of the war in Iraq, the fact that there was never any connection with 9/11, even though it was conflated in the minds of many Fox News viewers, and remains that way. Can a Democrat win by trying to tell the truth and educate the American people that GWAT, as even Donald Rumsfeld has acknowledged, is not only inaccurate and inartful, it's not helpful?
I think that, of course, they can win by telling the truth, and they should, by all means. And, you know, talking about an effective frame is not by any means a way of avoiding what that truth is out there. I think that the one problem with the notion of talking about a police approach to fighting terrorism is that it seems to be trumped by the much more emotional threats or warnings about nuclear bombs and terrorist attacks in cities. And so trying to leap back to a less emotional concept, it can be a little bit difficult, I think. You know, one of the things that Democrats...
But what about an alternative approach, like instead of tasking the military, I'm going to create the al-Qaeda Cruncher Task Force. You know, and we're going to be smart about this, and we're going to send commandos, and we're going to drop them into Pakistan, and we don't care what the Pakistanis say, and we're going to get that guy.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think that we need to talk about being smart and fast, and we need to come up with a policy and proposals that really electrify the American imagination. I think that, you know, we are a country that likes to believe that we can solve just about every problem by bringing together manpower, determination, and technology. And I think that those ideas are ideas that can be brought into combination to the benefit of Democrats. But I also think that Democrats need to claim in very passionate terms the responsibility for the military itself, talking about how the policies have not just failed to stop terrorism, but they have broken our military, broken the backs in terms of, in economic terms, but also in terms of the idealism of those who would enlist in the Army. So, you know, smart, fast, but also, you know, we're going to take responsibility for restoring the greatness of the military.
Well, Jeffrey Feldman, it's a real pleasure to meet you in person. Thanks for making the trip here. I hope you're very successful on your West Coast book tour, and we'll talk again soon.
Thanks so much, Peter.
Visit the website, frameshopisopen.com, and Jeffrey Feldman's new book, once again, is called Framing the Debate. Coming up next, we head into the free speech zone. We're going to kick it off with Mike Ergo. He served in Iraq and formerly supported the president's war. We'll talk about what changed his mind and why he is now marching in peace protests. Also next hour, Dr. R.K. Pachauri joins us from India. He is chair of the IPCC, and we'll talk about the third report on global warming that was issued last week. That's all ahead right here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Tell you what I got cooking, Dinners Ready. I went to dinnersready.com, chose 8 gourmet dinners, made an appointment, and went to their storefront in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove and prepared the meals there myself. Now I'm cooking them in my own home.
What's that you say? Dinner's ready?
That's right, dinner's ready. It's the newest concept in home cooking. They do all the shopping and chopping, and I get all the credit. If you're too busy to go in and make your dinners, they'll even do it for you. So sign up at dinnersready.com, stop by and see them in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove, or give them a call at 645-9100. That's 645-9100. Dinner's ready!
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself. CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. In the House, another round of debate on Iraq.
If you don't fight them there, where are you going to fight them? You going to fight them in New York? You going to fight them in L.A.? You going to wait till they blow up Indianapolis? Where? If not now, when?
Indiana Republican Dan Burton argued unsuccessfully against a bill that could cut funding as early as midsummer. Speaker Nancy Pelosi led the charge to challenge President Bush.
Congress has offered the president recommendations for change in Iraq. In rejecting them, he has offered nothing in return except a demand for more of the same, a blank check for a war without end.
The House passed the measure on a vote of 221 to 205. The president warned earlier that he'd veto the bill if it gets to the Senate.
My message to the members of Congress is, whatever your beliefs may be, let's make sure our troops get funded. And let's make sure politicians don't tell our commanders how to conduct operations. Don't hamstring our people in the field.
Mr. Bush indicated he could accept a bill that sets benchmarks for the Iraqi government as long as there are no penalties if it doesn't meet them. Purdue Pharma, maker of the drug pain drug OxyContin, will be feeling some financial pain for wrongdoing. CBS News correspondent Barry Bagnato has details of today's settlement with the Justice Department.
U.S. Attorney John Brownlee accuses the company of creating a ring of abuse that contributed to hundreds of deaths, triggered a crime spree, and misled patients.
People who are suffering from chronic pain want a drug that can relieve them of that pain and yet at the same time is safe not only for themselves and society. And Purdue promised that.
Purdue Pharma and three current and former executives must pay more than $700 million in criminal and civil penalties. Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Washington.
The clamor for his resignation has died down, and Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez made a return appearance on Capitol Hill today, this time appearing before the House Judiciary Committee. Gonzalez apologized again for the awkward way that eight U.S. attorneys were fired and promised a thorough review.
We are doing an investigation to ensure that, in fact, if anything improper happened here, we're going to get to the bottom of it and there will be accountability.
Rain-swollen rivers and streams have spilled over dozens of levees in Missouri, and CBS News correspondent Cynthia Bowers reports the danger might not be over even when the floodwaters recede.
One of the things the Corps of Engineers stresses that worries them down the road is that these levees, which are basically